he sees on TV commercials. She was spoken to, she was speaking to Talk TV.
It drives me mad when I see adverts full of black people, full of Asian people. Well, it doesn't reflect our society.
Does it drive you mad? Plus, the allegations that Sir Sadiq Khan now is part of a grooming cover-up. 9,000 cases, supposedly. Here is the mayor speaking back in January.
The situation in London in relation to young people being groomed is different to the parts of the country. So what we have in London is young people being groomed, use your words, not mine, to be using county lines.
Plus how millions of tenants are safe after a new law will outlaw black mould and other conditions. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the government is expected to set out details of an independent inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabatu. The asylum seeker, who will now be deported, was freed from jail by mistake last Friday and arrested in North London yesterday morning. He was sentenced last month for sexually assaulting a teenage girl and a woman in Epping. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, says it can't be allowed to happen again.
A member of staff has been suspended, and it's right that there is a full independent inquiry into what has happened, and I'll be announcing that to Parliament, going into details about that terms of reference. We need to get to the bottom of how this happened and why it happened.
A report by MPs says the government must get a grip on the UK's failed migrant accommodation system. Ministers have promised to end the housing of asylum seekers in hotels by the next election, but the Home Affairs Committee has warned the pledge risks under-delivery and further damage to public trust. New rules requiring social landlords in England to fix damp and mould issues quickly have come into force. The law is named after two-year-old Awab Ishak, who died from mould exposure at his home in Rochdale in 2020. The changes mean landlords will have to repair reported hazards within 24 hours. Kirby Hoyle from the Greater Manchester Tenants Union says the problem is getting worse.
It's shocking. You know, we've had people come forward where their children have been hospitalised because of damp and mould in the properties. And this is since Awab has passed away as well.
Keir Starmer is due to travel to Turkey for talks on the deal to sell British-made Typhoon fighter jets to the country. He will meet President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to discuss the multi-billion pound agreement announced in July. A property website says the usual pre-Christmas market slowdown has started earlier. Figures from Zoopla suggest demand from home buyers and agreed sales are down compared with a year ago. It says uncertainty about the budget is holding some buyers back. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.45 after closing up 67 on Friday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather. Sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning dry for most by this afternoon. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after seven, Monday the 27th of October. If it wasn't so gravely serious, you would laugh. The sex offender freed in error, a weekend of farce. It is reported he will now be deported as soon as possible. And the solution from the government is yet more red tape, which has angered prison bosses. We'll give you the full background to that. In other news, British Airways halts its sponsorship of Louis Theroux's podcast over an interview with the frontman of Bob Villain. Why on earth would he have thought that was a good idea? Here's part of the exchange.
Do you stand by the chant, and would you chant that on stage now?
Oh, yeah, like what, if I was to go on Glastonbury again tomorrow? Yeah, I would do it again. I'm not regretful of it.
Well, that's tough questioning from Mr. Theroux there, isn't it? He really went for it. You'll hear more on that. Plus, a heck of a row over a new ballroom. Speaking in the White House last week, President Trump...
I think it'll be one of the great ballrooms anywhere in the world, probably the finest ballroom ever built. And we're doing it, no cost to the country. It's being put, the money's being put in by me and donors.
And as many American citizens are struggling, I'm sure the sound of a new ballroom is exactly music to their ears. Coming to the reforms that the government say will make housing safer, so-called AWABS law, you'll be safe from black mould. We'll give you more on that. The rather gloomy forecast as what could be, got a month to go now, and the budget over the weekend, including a former governor of the Bank of England. And one of the more extraordinary interviews of a rather long career, Paul Gascoigne. I'm going to tell you how you can get to the X-rated version later, but you have to be fairly relaxed about fairly strong language. But here's something we can review. Mr. Gascoigne reflecting on a letter he received from Manchester United, then Manchester United boss Alex Ferguson, after he turned down playing for Fergie to go to Spurs.
I got first fan mail, talked to him, and I thought, oh, fan mail, get in. I was excited. I opened it, was from Fergie. Not very nice. You stupid fat, he called me.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
More on that in the next hour, and indeed details of how you can get the director's cut, the X version, whatever it might be. Now, the end of an era? Extraordinary scenes when the sex offender, whose horse crime caused such consternation in one part of Essex, was effectively on the run for much of the weekend, although it looks like he was freed in error, and bringing about now more red tape. LBC's reporter Shivani Sharma joins me in the studio with the full background. Shivani, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. This 48-hour manhunt for one of the most high-profile sex offenders in the UK started on Friday morning, just 1 month after the Ethiopian national Hadash Kabatu was imprisoned for sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl and a woman. The prison service revealed that he'd been mistakenly released when he was supposed to be deported. He was meant to be going to the Immigration Removal Centre, where he was going on to be deported. And somewhere along the way, during that process, he was mistakenly freed from Chelmsford Prison. He was spotted and videoed wandering around Chelmsford for some time on Friday. He seemed confused. He was wearing his grey prison tracksuit, carrying a plastic bag with his belongings on his back, and got directions to the local station, where he then boarded a train to Stratford in London around lunchtime on Friday. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, told LBC at the weekend that he was furious.
I mean, I feel embarrassed. I can't even begin to put into words how angry I feel. And no doubt speak for the Home Secretary and the Justice Secretary and the Prime Minister in saying, like, I saw the news and just thought, how on earth could this have happened? Like, he was meant to be transferred to authorities for deportation. So I do not understand how he was let back out on the streets. And if the reports are to be believed, hung around for quite a while outside the prison, apparently confused himself as to what was going on.
Now, Nick, the Met Police and other forces scrutinised CCTV. They appealed to the public to help spot him, and he was spotted several times across the weekend in Dalston in East London, and then eventually he was spotted by a dog walker in Finsbury Park on Sunday morning, this time in a black padded jacket, a hood and a jeans, and he was carrying an avocado patterned tote bag on his back as well. The family of the 14-year-old girl who Kabatu assaulted in the summer said this whole ordeal caused her an immense amount of stress and anxiety.
Myself and my family feel massively let down and infuriated by HMP Chelmsford, the police, the justice system and our Labour government. They have all failed. Not just us as a family, but they have failed everyone in the country.
Now, the Justice Secretary, David Lammy, will be grilled about this in Parliament later. He says Kabatu will likely be deported this week. And as you mentioned, the government, he says, is introducing new mandatory checks on prisoners before they're released. This is a response to what happened over the weekend. But we know he's not the only one, Nick. In the last year, 262 prisoners in England and Wales were mistakenly freed. That's more than double on the year before. But David Lammy has confirmed there will be a national inquiry into what happened.
This was totally unacceptable. I will be making a statement in Parliament. There will be a further and full investigation into how this happened. On behalf of the public, I want to be reassured that it won't continue to happen, and that the systems that we put in place, the checks and balances, are there to reassure the public.
this really has been a nightmare for the government, Nick. Reform UK's Nigel Farage has said this is evidence that Britain is broken. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, says the entire system is collapsing under Labour.
LBC's Shivani Sharma reporting. So it depends what generation you are. If you're of considerable years, you would say this is like the Keystone Cops. Then you might get up a little more to date and say, carry on bungling. And then a little more up to date, perhaps an episode of Porridge, whichever way you say it, is actually no laughing matter because there was a sex offender on the loose. Let's turn first to Professor Ian Acheson, who's a former prison governor and was head of security at Wandsworth Prison, now a senior advisor to the Counter-Extremism Project, and joins me now. Professor, in layman's terms, can you explain to my listeners what went wrong as he was accidentally released from Chelmsford? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It seems almost inconceivable, doesn't it? And one of the first things I'd like to say is that the Lord Chancellor David Lammy's announcement that there will be extra checks ought not to be necessary because there are elaborate checks that are already supposed to happen when a prisoner goes through the reception centre of a prison prior to either being received into the prison or exited out of the prison. There are paper checks, there are electronic checks. One of the things that reception officers are specifically mandated to do is to check to make sure that whoever they are intending to release is not subject to hold by a deportation order. So, you know, you've described it in various ways. It's like a bad Monty Python sketch, in my opinion. You know, you've got all these systems that seem to have spectacularly failed, and somebody that entered the reception area, who was supposed to have been transferred into the custody of the Home Office, was instead released. And the processes for both of those are entirely separate.
You describe them as elaborate, but clearly they don't work, Professor.
Well, they haven't worked in this instance.
Or 261 others, yeah. It's believed.
No, absolutely. And, you know, that I believe is 118% increase year on year from the previous year. I think what is really important for people to understand is that this is a spectacular failure in itself, but it is symptomatic of a much larger problem within the prison system. I mean, when Chelmsford was inspected and inspectors virtually walked out 5 years ago, they described a prison that was violent, unsafe, chaotic, where staff were inexperienced and they were overwhelmed by the tasks that they were supposed to carry out, and morale was basically non-existent. Those sorts of factors exist everywhere else. If it hadn't been for Chelmsford today, it would have been somewhere else tomorrow, and it is likely to continue while the prison service is in such abject freefall in relation to all of the things the public expect it to do.
How will prison governors, prison staff, prison professionals react to what is thought to be additional red tape to be announced by Mr. Lammy later today?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what else these measures are supposed to do. What prison governors need to do and what the government needs to support them to do is to operate prisons fully staffed with suitable and sufficient people in charge and trained up to operate the systems that already exist. It's all very well to say, I think it's kind of reflexive and performative, to be honest with you, very well to say that there are going to be additional checks. What we have to see is the discipline reimposed on the service across the prison estate that means that these things cannot happen again.
We've talked about him being effectively on the run. Professor, isn't there an argument that instead of putting prisoners in grey tracksuits, they should in some way, as they are in the United States, be marked, whether it's like yellow stripes down one leg or, I don't know, arrows or something? Shouldn't that be introduced?
Well, I don't think that would have been of any help because of the
error
that
occurred. Stuck out. If you've got a guy wandering around Chelmsford with one of the legs of his tracksuit is painted yellow, I think a lot of people... Did you see a bloke with a yellow... Oh, yeah, I did, actually. Yeah. I saw him just there. Don't you think that might help?
No, I understand what you mean, but of course this person was, as far as we know, released into the community as a prisoner who'd served his custodial time. He was supposed to have been transferred within the secure confines of the prison to a Home Office secure van, taken to a secure immigration removal centre, and then taken to the airport and deported back to Ethiopia, where I hope he's down this week. So I don't think that would have happened. But of course, what we saw was a man who was clearly dressed in a prison issue grey tracksuit, wondering about, confused himself, it looks like, when he'd been released from prison, asking staff outside the prison what he was supposed to do next.
I will leave it there, Professor. As ever, thanks for your input on this. Ian Atchison, your former prison governor, you were head of security at Wandsworth Jail. You're now senior advisor of the Counter-Extremism Project. Just to remind you, as Shivani Sharma, my colleague, did, Gabatu was convicted of making inappropriate comments to a 14-year-old girl before he tried to kiss her on July the 7th. He'd been in the country for 8 days, having arrived on one of those small boats. His trial also heard a day later he sexually assaulted a woman who was trying to kiss her, putting his hand on her leg and telling her she was pretty. She subsequently called 999. And we now know the circumstances in which she was accidentally released. 262 prisoners were accidentally released last year, but none have proved as embarrassing for the Ministry of Justice as this one. This is a Whitehall farce, without any doubt. But what about these extra checks? Do you think it will make any difference? And how can Labour really say that they're trying to crack down on the gangs when they just release sex offenders onto the streets? On the subject of sex offenders, I take you back to January. Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan.
The situation in London in relation to young people being groomed is different to other parts of the country. So what we have in London is young people being groomed, use your words, not mine, to be used in county lines.
What does it matter whose words they are? Or does he have trouble using the expression grooming gangs? He certainly has trouble coming on this show, because he won't. Now the Met is to review 9,000 cases. Embarrassment for Sir Sadiq. We'll look at that later in the show. 7.15 LBC News headlines now then. Thomas Watts.
The Justice Secretary says Hadish Gabatu will be deported this week after his release in error from prison. A report by MPs says ministers must set out a clear strategy to fix the asylum accommodation system. And social landlords in England can now face court action or have to pay compensation if they fail to address mould and damp issues. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, drier this afternoon, high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The South Circular Road's being closed westbound at Forest Hill, and that's because of an accident and there are queues on the approach. Also very busy on the M23 going northbound to Junction 9 at Gatwick Airport. A car's broken down on the slip road, but it's still very busy in the main carriageway. Also delays on the A41 at Finchley Road southbound in West Hampstead, and that's following an accident. On the Underground, Southwark Station along with Arsenal Station both closed. That's because of a shortage of staff. Also, Southwestern Railway services are delayed by about 15 minutes between Waterloo and Raynes Park. And also on London Overground, the Mildmay line is suspended between Willesden Junction and Clapham Junction.
This is LBC.
Build your own package with TUI. Let's go. City break or a beach escape. Lovely. Fly from your local airport.
Taxi's here.
Handy. Any day of the week. Ideal. On a TUI flight or a partner airline.
This is your captain speaking.
Nice. How many nights? 3? 5? 14? Perfect. More options, more choice. All wrapped up with a TUI smile. TUI. Live happy. Atoll and Abtra protected. Booking T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like saving £28 on this week's Big Shop when you switch to Lidl Plus from Tesco Club Card. See the shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only. Offer ends 5th of 11th, 25. Price check, 20th of 10th, 25. And pro-rata based on size. Tesco also sell other products. Excludes multi-buys, T's and C's apply.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
What about my medical history?
No, no medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
7.18, coming to you, Beverly, you'll be the first caller. Let me just quickly tell you some of the front pages, and indeed the story we're talking about is the front page of some of your newspapers. The Daily Express, migrant sex attacker will be deported this week. The Guardian, Epping sex offender back in custody, as you were hearing from my colleague Shivani Sharma, due probably to go. I would imagine they would. The government would like him see gone like yesterday. Look, possibly for later in the week. A couple of other front pages before we move on. The Daily Mail telling us about billions wasted on hotels for migrants, a so-called bombshell report revealing Home Office incompetence, which, of course, this story also tracks. How many Home Office incompetence stories can you handle in any one day? That's also the front page of the Daily Telegraph as well. Let's give you The Sun just before I move on, which is an interesting story. This is Prince Andrew. This is, The Sun says, a Royal World exclusive. And reportedly, Prince Andrew and his ex-wife Sarah Ferguson will leave Royal Lodge, but they're demanding that they have two properties in exchange. Harry and Meghan's former Windsor place, Frogmore Cottage, and nearby Adelaide Cottage, on which William and Kate will leave next month. So that would appear to be, according to The Sun, this is a twofer. You give us two homes and we'll give you the one back, is reportedly what that royal couple are asking for. To the LBC app, they've got more details on how billions have been wasted on migrant hotels. And let's pick another one at random. Here we are. The Daily Mirror website has photographs of Meghan and Harry and their children out hunting pumpkins as it gets very close, of course, to it's this Friday, isn't it? It gets close to Halloween. Obviously, these pictures, quite rightly, you don't see their faces, nor should you. They're sort of taken from behind. But there we are, the family going around pumpkin patches, and let's hope they got some big, juicy ones. Beverly's in York. Beverly, the farce that we've witnessed over the last 48, 72 hours, what do you say to that? Good morning.
I'm not surprised, but good morning, Nick.
Hello.
I adore your show.
Thank you.
The only one I will listen to throughout.
Thank you very much. Why are you not surprised? Do you have experience? Are you in policing?
No, I was a prison officer.
You're a oh my goodness, you're a brave person. My goodness.
Well, no. You'll notice I said I was.
Yeah.
I got training in spring and had left by late summer.
So how many months did you actually serve then, Beverly? Just
about 5 months.
5 months, okay, right. It didn't work out for you. Might I ask why?
It wasn't what I signed up for. The service is in an absolute dire state.
Right.
First of all, there are some amazing officers, some very brave officers, but the prisoners run the wings.
Tell me how that shows itself. I'm sure you're right, by the way. Tell me how that shows itself.
Without wanting to say, go into too much detail, but I, you know, walked into cells that had a group of men with a mirror, a blade, and some powder.
Oh, right. So they were taking cocaine, using cocaine, I assume.
Allegedly.
Right. Yeah.
The things I've seen and heard, and as for the recruiting system, working with those that have come over from overseas on a care working visa, and then have applied to be a prison officer, get through despite limited English, despite limited reading and writing. Taking on staff that live 30 miles away and don't drive, but still giving them the job anyway.
What do you think happened at Chelmsford when this bloke was accidentally released? And then, remember, staff gave him instructions how to get to the railway station.
Either somebody didn't care, couldn't be bothered, there's another word for couldn't be bothered, or the person that they were dealing with either didn't have the propensity to question who it was when he agreed to say that he was the old one, didn't have the confidence in arguing with it because they didn't have the skills to interact with people, didn't have the skills to question. The experienced ones would have had him in a heartbeat. But I'm guessing that on that shift, they had somebody that was either a junior, a rookie, a just started, or someone that they just got in because nobody could cover the shift.
Lastly, you were there 5 months. What's morale like among your colleagues?
Well, when you're working with desks that are propped up by soap boxes, literally, and bars of soap, it's so low, really low.
They put desks on bars of soap?
Crumbling desks on bars of soap. I kid you not.
But I'm sure, but Beverly, the soap is going to crumble under any weight, isn't it? Or have I gone mad?
No. I kid you not. If I could have taken pictures, I would have done.
All right.
And as for Lammy, what a clown.
David Lammy, you're talking about, the Justice Secretary.
David the Clown Lammy, we call him.
David, I hope the word, I didn't, David the what?
Clown.
Oh, the clown. Okay. all right. Listen. What are you? Do you mind asking? Are you doing other work, or are you sort of resting after that horrible experience? What are you doing now?
No. I've moved up to still public sector, but thankfully, with the money these guys get paid, ain't enough. Yeah. And there are some bloody good prison officers. Excuse my French.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Still can't get over the idea of propping desks up on bars of soap. Beverly, thank you. I had a desk that was a tape that was a door on boxes of copy paper, but not even, which used to get difficult when they needed to take some copy paper away because it had to be a slant, slope until the next slot went. John's in Enfield. John, your reaction to what we're hearing. Good morning.
Oh, hello, Nick. Yeah, I think there's two things going on here. You know, first you've got like a failed prison service, which I think you probably could blame over with the Tories over the last 14 years, yeah, with this whole, you know, mishap of what's happened. But I think it's a bit of a diversionary tactic because they're talking about, oh, we're going to deport this guy, yeah?
Well, that's but, what we'd say this week, hopefully.
Yeah, but what does that mean? Do you remember the one in, one out, and
yes.
the one back in again?
Yes,
yeah?
Yes.
Now, deporting, if you're going to deport a guy, and you don't protect the borders, what's to stop this guy getting on the dinghy and come back in again?
Nothing, as we've seen already.
Exactly. It's like trying to close the gate after the horse is bolted. Yeah. They're doing nothing to protect the borders. They're willingly letting in criminality into the country, and it's the poor police service or the citizens that have to pick up the price. Yeah.
Now, what would you say to David Lammy about this, lastly, John?
Well, what would I say? What would I say is, number one, right, we're a sovereign nation. I've said this before millions of times, Nick. We're a sovereign nation, yeah? Number two,
yeah?
A state of emergency.
Oh,
number
yes.
three,
yes,
get the naval ships out yes. and escort these people back to France. And if Europe's got a problem with it, we kick them out of our fishy waters.
I remember we've had that conversation before. Sorry, John, I have asked you what you'd say, and I respect what you're saying, but I think we have to agreeably disagree or whatever. That's right, agree disagreeably. Disagree agreeably, I'm there now. Because you cannot declare a national... That what little global confidence there is in this country would be shredded if we were doing something like that. John, thank you. We will return to that subject and get into your anger on that. 7:26. But the headlines are in for London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, and they make for some pretty troubling reading. Khan quotes, covering up grooming crisis, is the Times. Khan quotes, grooming cover-up, close quotes, claims, is the Sun. And for the Daily Express, quotes, BBC failed to scrutinise Khan, close quotes, amid probe into London grooming gangs. Well, let's go back to January. An intriguing exchange between the Conservative leader in the London Assembly, Susan Hall, and Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, in which he appears to downplay the existence of gangs and even try and get into a bit of wordplay with Susan Hall.
Just how many grooming gangs have we got in London?
So the situation in London in relation to young people being groomed is different to other parts of the country. So what we have in London is young people being groomed, use your words, not mine, to be used in county lines.
Grooming gangs that I would call rape gangs. Tell me about them. How many of those have we got? Not country lines.
We know in London there are issues about exploitation of young people. But they're not as defined by the member in her definition of what those types of gangs are.
Dodging to a degree, surely. Let's get Zach Garner-Perkis into the conversation. Now, he's investigations editor at the Daily Express, and it is the Daily Express that first really made headway on this story and joins me now. What are the allegations, and let's stress that word, allegations being directed towards City Hall then, Zach? Good morning.
Good morning. So I think, look, with this, there's a pretty clear public record that shows Sadiq that, I mean, what you put down there, that exchange that he had with Susan Hall, that's a pretty well-known one. But after that, he actually followed up with the answer to a question about that, where he said there were no reports and no indications of grooming gangs in London. Well, after we did a bit of digging around and found some inspection reports of the Metropolitan Police and what looks like some pretty clear case studies of grooming gangs. We showed those to Maggie Oliver, the kind of the whistleblower cop from Rochdale.
That's right, the Manchester officer was a Rochdale whistleblower, absolutely, yep.
Yeah, she had a look at those, and she told us for at least three of those cases, 100% she would say they were grooming gangs. Now, Sadiq Khan read all of those reports because he responded to them publicly. We put all of this to the Metropolitan Police and the Mayor. I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, or sorry, it was last, yeah, a couple of weeks ago on Wednesday, that's all of a sudden the Metropolitan Police say that they've got, well, it came out just before the weekend, 9,000 cases that they are reviewing. Both the mayor and Sir Mark Rowley, who have previously not used the term grooming gangs, have now both used the term grooming gangs publicly.
Zach, what needs to happen next, in your view?
Well, I think we need to go back through this and say, how were Sadiq Khan and Sir Mark Rowley so confident about there being no indication? So Sir Mark Rowley said that he wasn't seeing this. He wasn't seeing this. When the Conservative members have asked him, he wasn't seeing this. Sadiq Khan has said there was no reports and no indication. Now, how were they able to say that? And how has that turned 180 to the complete opposite? Because the way that it's looking at now is, it's not that just London has a few grooming gangs. London is the capital for grooming gangs in the whole country. How has that happened?
Zach Garner-Perkis, your investigations editor at the Daily Express, credit to you and your colleagues. You're the one who really have given this the glare of publicity, and I sense you're not going to let it go. Thanks for your time this morning, Zach. We'll come back to our conversation. Munesh, you're going to be talking about the migrant asylum seeker and sex offender who hopefully will be kicked out of the country this week. In the next hour, opportunity to discuss a true sporting legend, football's Paul Gascoigne. It's a very reflective book. But I asked him, what was his biggest regret?
My biggest regret? I think it's probably when I it's got to be taking that cocaine when I went and seen Raoul Moat. I've never touched it since. I went to say Scotland. It was quite scary, to be fair.
You'll be absolutely stunned by what Mr. Gascoigne did when he thought that the Raoul Moat, you remember, who was cornered by the police, he was convinced that Moat was his twin brother. He doesn't have one. That's what the drugs had done to him. Plus, in the world of business, from Phantom of the Opera to Champion of the Racecourse, Andrew, or Lord Lloyd Webber, joins others in campaigning against ludicrous tax hikes posed for the horse racing industry. It's just turned 7:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
The asylum seeker Hadash Kabatiu is expected to be deported this week after his mistaken release from prison. The sex offender was arrested in North London yesterday morning after being freed from HMP Chelmsford in error on Friday. A committee of MPs says ministers must set out a clear strategy to fix the asylum accommodation system. The Home Affairs Committee says a promise to end hotel use by 2029 risks under-delivery and undermining public trust. Social landlords in England could face court action or have to pay compensation if they fail to address mould and damp issues. A new law, named after a two-year-old boy who died, is now in force to protect tenants living in poor conditions. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning dry for most by this afternoon. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Oh, wow.
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like saving £28 on this week's Big Shop when you switch to Lidl Plus from Tesco Club Card. See the shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only. Offer ends 5th of 11th, 25. Price check, 20th of 10th, 25. And pro-rated based on size. Tesco also sell other products. Excludes multi-buys, T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
7:33 is the time. Munesh going to come back to the conversation concerning the end of an era. The era that saw that migrant sex offender released and even given directions to the nearest railway station. Fortunately, was picked up. By the way, it was picked up because of an eagle-eyed dog walker. thank goodness, what do you think what dog walkers have done down the years? Do you remember they found the World Cup thanks to... What? We lost the World Cup in 1966, the actual football World Cup, and it was found by Pickles the dog when he was on a walk. It's a true story. Absolutely. Thank goodness for dog walkers. Munesh, you'll be the next caller on that. Let's get into the world of finance. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. He'll be chewing his fingernails down now. There's a month ago to the budget, and there was no shortage of speculation through the Sunday papers, not least this idea of a so-called mansion tax. Christian, what is it? Who would it affect? And not a lot of love in the room for it. Good morning.
Good morning. No, there aren't enough dog walkers out there to alleviate the concerns of, well, I suppose in this case, homeowners. But frankly, as I'm sure we'll come on to discuss, plenty of industries and individuals who are worried about what the budget might have in store. The Mail on Sunday was reporting the government considering plans now for a form of a mansion tax hitting owners of properties. If your property exceeds £2 million in value, there could be an annual charge of 1% of the amount by which its value exceeds £2 million, which means that if you live in a £3 million home, it could be another £10,000 a year levy. Now, people might not be racing to get their little violins out for this particular demographic, but it is another area where people are anticipating further tax increases. And the former governor of the Bank of England, Lord King, Mervyn King, was out and about in the Sunday broadcast studios yesterday, and he said that this idea just lacks any sort of sensible thinking. It's not part of a strategy. And he said, look, the point is, you want to reform property taxes and set out a plan to reform property taxes. But what we're having, and this is not unique to this chancellor, he said, and I think he's right, is that you just get to a situation once a year or maybe twice a year where the OBR tells you how much money you need to raise, and then you go away and you work out which taxes you can hike in order to get to that figure. And it's not a sensible way to approach the running of an economy. So yes, it was the mansion tax that came in for criticism yesterday, but it might just as well be any of the other different taxes that are being discussed as the chancellor tries to make their numbers add up for this time next month.
An impressive alliance when showbiz meets sport. I talk about Andrew, now Lord Lloyd Webber, Michael Owen, the former England football player, a lot of the nation's best horse racing breeders and owners. What is it that they want to rein in?
Well, the horse racing industry has been highly concerned for a considerable period of time about the proposal from this government to bring the levy on online horse racing bets into line with other parts of online gambling. So currently the horse racing bets online have a levy of 15% attached to them, whereas slot machines and online casinos attract a 21% levy. And the government says, let's make them all 21%. And the horse racing industry is so concerned about the effect of this on their sector and on the employment in all different parts of that sector that they actually went on strike. Do you remember in September?
Yes, I do.
They didn't race for a day. Racetracks were silent to make their point. They've now wheeled out their big guns, including, as you say, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Michael Owen, Dido Harding, former TalkTalk CEO who now runs the Jockey Club. They've written to the Times saying, please don't increase the taxes on this sector. It will have a devastating effect on all the different parts of it, all the different jobs that nobody sees that will culminate in race day itself. The government says that, look, in-person betting, race day betting, trackside betting is not affected by this. They recognise the contribution of what is Britain's second most popular sport, I think, but that it is a sensible thing to do to equalise the rate at which you tax online bets. But the industry certainly won't take it lying down.
Okay, just to give you some of the numbers, they say they're worth £4.1 billion to the UK economy, 85,000 jobs, £300 million in annual tax revenue. And if we're talking tax and revenue, we better talk tariffs and the latest Donald Trump announcement. Christian?
Yes, we have to keep our wits about us when considering Donald Trump's tariff announcements. You remember he was furious with Canada last week after a Canadian politician effectively mocked his tariff policy. In response to that, he sort of froze their trade talks, and he has now said he's going to increase tariffs on Canada by 10%, sort of revenge for daring to take the mickey out of him. But it's the big one, China, that he's focused on now. And here there is some good news, and I suppose we should get used to this yo-yoing. There was an extraordinary row, an eruption, China saying it was going to ban exporting of all its rare earth minerals, and America saying it was going to impose fresh 100% tariffs. Well, look, they have calmed down a little bit. Donald Trump is set to meet President Xi Jinping later this week at a summit, an Asian economies summit, ahead of which the various trade negotiating teams from the world's biggest and the world's second biggest economy have said, okay, look, we'll step back from the brink a bit. We're not going to pursue that tariff madness. We're going to, China has said, okay, fine, we take it back, we will buy your soybeans, and the US has said, that's good news, thanks very much, we won't impose 100% tariffs on goods coming into the US. So there is much more to be discussed, but they are both striking a bit more of a positive note. But this is how it goes. Donald Trump can wake up in a bad mood, and he can send out a post on social media, send the world economy into a bit of a panic, and then pull back from the brink a few days later.
And let's finish with a positive one that's on the City AM online concerning females in the industry, in the city. What are you hearing there?
It's a new analysis from Bowmore Wealth Group said that the number of female high earners in the UK, hitting the very highest tax rate and salary takes, is currently at a record high. More and more women find themselves holding much more senior positions in the workplace. According to this analysis, those who earn over £125,000 and therefore pay the top rate of income tax, number of women in that bracket has jumped by 12% to just under 300,000, up from about 250,000 the year before. I'm afraid it's still a bit of a bleak picture when you look at the gender pay gap at the very top, people earning north of £1 million and indeed making up board positions. But it is something that the city in particular has been slowly moving in the right direction on. And I suppose if we can congratulate the figures today or welcome the figures today, we should point out that it's a pretty punishing tax rate to be in, and there are all sorts of complications hit your tax status when you go up to about £125,000. So on the one hand, it's signs of progress. On the other hand, it's just more and more people being pulled into quite a complicated tax bracket.
Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. Thanks, Christian. Talk around the same time tomorrow. Munesh is in Southall. Thank you for hanging on the line. What do you want to say about this either shambles or scandal up at Chelmsford? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Good morning. Yeah, I'm just extremely confused here because, you know, on the basis of, like, when these boat people come in, they're taken by secured guards and coaches,
yep,
and taken through centres, immigration centres, and then forwarded to these five-star and four-star hotels.
I don't think they're five-star, but I think a couple have been four-star, yes, and most are three, I believe. Anyway, go ahead. You're making your point. Absolutely, sir.
Yeah. But then when someone's about to be deported, which is what we want to deport these criminals from here.
Of course we do, yeah.
Where's the secure van that's supposed to come up and pick them up and say, listen, we're here, we're waiting, can you get the paperwork ready? We've got security here, we're going to take them to the deportation.
Well, that's what went wrong in Chelmsford. That's what David Lammy is going to have to address today in Parliament.
Well, on that basis, I would say, if they're considering this as a mistake, I think it's a systematic mistake. And I was very much surprised, as other people would do also, when David Lammy went to visit the prison service, why wasn't there a mistake made where he was put in a cell and, you know, by mistake left there for a few weeks?
Now, that's quite a clever line. We've accidentally locked up the Justice Secretary, but don't worry, sex offenders on the lam, on the loose. Munesh, thank you for holding on the line. Nice line. Have yourself a good day. Thank you. 7:41 is the time. British Airways has halted its sponsorship of Louis Theroux's podcast over an interview with the frontman of Bob Villain. The airline has withdrawn its adverts after Theroux interviewed Villain, whose real name is Pascal Robinson Foster. I remind you, of course, of the grotesque IDF chants, anti-IDF, death to the IDF chants, during Glastonbury. Here's a little of the exchange on Mr. Theroux's podcast.
Do you stand by the chant, and would you chant that on stage now?
Oh, yeah, like what, if I was to go on Glastonbury again tomorrow? Yeah, I would do it again. I'm not regretful of it. I'm not regretful of it. I do it again tomorrow, twice on Sundays. I'm not regretful of it. At all. Like, the subsequent backlash that I've faced, it's minimal. It's minimal compared to what people in Palestine are going through. And that's they're the people that I'm doing it for. They're the people that I'm being vocal for. Then what is there to regret?
Well, he's hardly robust in a challenge, is he? Let's turn to Danny Cohen, former director of BBC Television, now president of Access Entertainment. Mr. Cohen, in your time at the BBC, you will have commissioned and authorised all sorts of programmes. If you had the opportunity to put this man in front of a Jeremy Paxman in his absolute prime or whatever, is there journalistic merit to that kind of interview? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, this isn't really about whether Louis Theroux interviewed this man. He's interviewed lots of extreme people in the past. It's about the way he interviewed him and what Theroux personally said. Theroux himself said things on the podcast which many will interpret as deeply anti-Semitic. So the problem really is not that he interviewed him, it's the way he did it and the words that came out of Theroux's own mouth.
What worried you about what you heard from Mr. Theroux?
Well, in particular, he made the claim that Jewish identity is the foundation of white nationalist movements across the world. And that, I think, will be widely interpreted as a classic anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. It's this idea that somehow Jewish people or a Jewish state are controlling world events or at the centre of a conspiracy of domination of the world. And as I say again, it's not what the interviewee said, it's what Theroux said. He tried to dress up in a kind of pseudo-intellectual argument. But I think people will understand what he was doing there. It was a Jewish conspiracy theory. And that's the part that the BBC and others need to really focus on today.
Lastly, as a former director of BBC Television, where are you on this man or the band Bob Villain? Should you just ignore them and hope they'll go away? Or get Andrew Neil to come at them from a long run-up?
I can't see any harm if you interview people properly. I mean, there were so many things that this man has said in recent months which Theroux could have asked him about and didn't. He's recently said, we ain't in the non-violent type. We understand that in dealing with tyrannical governments, you need to be violent sometimes. We are for armed resistance. It would have been nice if Theroux had challenged him on quotes like that rather than the softball interview he gave him.
Danny Cohen, former director of BBC Television, now president of Access Entertainment. Thank you for your input on that. Coming up after the news, how millions of you, if you're tenants, are now safe from black mould through a new law. You'll hear from the Housing Secretary on that. 7.45, LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
The government is expected to set out details of an independent inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabatu. A report by MPs says the government must get a grip on the UK's failed migrant accommodation system and new rules requiring social landlords in England to fix damp and mould issues more quickly have come into force. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning drier later. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M1 northbound up to Junction 6 at North Watford. It's following an accident and there are queues on the approach. Southbound is all open but very busy because of onlookers. Also delays on the M25 clockwise to Junction 27 at the M11. A car has broken down. In Ewell, the Cheam roads had to be closed westbound at the Ewell bypass, the A24 junction, and that's for emergency repair works. In Forest Hill, there are lengthy delays on the South Circular Road both ways because some emergency repair works are taking place. And the A41 at West Hampstead, this is the Finchley Road, slow southbound following an accident. And on the train, South Western Railway services are delayed at Waterloo.
This is LBC.
Mr. Thing loves winter. Fluffy slippers, hot chalk, the heating on. Uh-oh, that didn't sound good. Looks like the boiler's packed in. Thankfully, Mr. Thing has British Gas Home Care cover, which means unlimited repairs for his boiler, heating, electrics and more. So he's covered for whatever winter throws at him. And right now, it's 50% off for the first 6 months. Search British Gas Home Care, one of the ways we're taking care of things. T's and C's apply. No claims within the first 14 days. Ends 1st of December. New customers only. Remaining 6 months at full price.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today.
New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11am, not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Train to Three Bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pumpkin each, kids. Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Protect your small business and understand cyber security.
It's 11 minutes before 8. We'll come back to our conversation about the Ethiopian who hopefully will be out of the country sometime this week in a moment. Let's pick up on a story you've heard on the LBC News Bulletin. New rules being introduced to protect tenants and to force social landlords to fix dangerous, what are called dangerous homes. Details now from Housing Secretary Steve Reid. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What is it that you and your colleagues are putting forward today? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It's always good to be on your show.
Thank you.
Is such an important announcement today. You'll know the background, but yes. Awab Ishak was born living in accommodation that was full of damp and mould of the most dangerous kind. And his parents raised it with their landlord, Rochdale Borough Homes, but they couldn't get any action. And tragically, unspeakably, a few days after his second birthday, Awab died. What we're bringing into force today are new rules that will compel social landlords to act at pace within 24 hours for the most serious cases like that one to put right the kind of circumstances that led to that child's death and elsewhere in the country would have led to very, very serious health consequences for not just babies, but other vulnerable older people, individuals with health conditions in a way that we should never have tolerated.
What will be the sanctions that can be taken against landlords who don't move swiftly enough, Secretary of State?
Well, the key thing is you want them to move quickly so that people get the problem
Indeed.
Fixed. But they can be taken to court. They can be taken to the ombudsman. They would receive fines for failing to act. But the intention is that we get them to act quickly. And this is just the first phase. We want to roll this scheme out to cover private rented tenants as well, and also other forms of danger in the home, including excess heat of the kind that we see in the summer with rising temperatures, and in the winter, of course, with excess cold, which can also be very damaging, particularly to vulnerable people's health.
When will this be in place in the social housing sector?
Well, social housing today, for
right.
the private rented sector, we've got the Renters' Rights Act, which has now completed its journey through Parliament, is due to receive royal assent. We believe that is imminent. As soon as that happens, the government can lay guidance for how it will be brought into force, and that is where we'll see the timetable for covering private rented. But I will make sure that is as quick as possible.
And someone listening now who might be in social housing right now and they have problems, who do they contact? If it's not going their way, if the company still refuses to address mould or whatever it might be, what are they meant to do?
Well, they can seek advice from the housing ombudsman. They can contact a solicitor to get support that way. They can go to a community legal advice centre. But what we're seeing actually, Nick, is social landlords now anticipating this this coming into force today have already started to act. So we're already seeing quicker response. I know from my own casework in my constituency a few years ago, I had five different cases relating to mould in a single set of blocks. The landlord wasn't responding. Today they're responding much faster because they know this is coming into force.
All right. Secretary of State, in a related conversation as Housing Secretary, would you be in support of a so-called mansion tax to be levied on owners of homes valued at over £2 million?
Well, I've seen some of the speculation about this, Nick, and, you know, it's never a good idea for a minister to come in and speculate about.
I'm not asking you to speculate, respectfully. I'm asking you, would you support? I'm not asking you whether it's going to happen. I'm asking whether you, in principle, would support something such as a mansion tax.
Well, but you are asking me to speculate, given that we've got the budget coming up soon. So it's best.
Is it something you would support?
Well, it's best for me not to answer that question, Nick, because with the budget coming up and the speculation that's around, it'll sound like I'm giving the Chancellor advice on what she should and shouldn't do, and that's never a good idea from a minister. We need to wait and see. It's only a few weeks until we get the budget, so we'll see then what decisions she's taken.
Well, let's see, Fitz, hear from someone who's a little more forthcoming, Secretary of State. Mervyn King, the former governor of the Bank of England, has said, this is not a coherent tax strategy. You could do a great deal by thinking it through first. Property taxes are an interaction between stamp duty, council tax, capital gains tax and inheritance tax. You don't solve that problem by just adding another wealth tax to it. Is the governor wrong? Former governor wrong?
Well, you know, we do need to wait and see what, you know, the Chancellor will be announcing her whole tax strategy and all the tax reforms coming forwards in the budget. And as I said, it's never a good idea for a minister to speculate. I don't know, actually, what's in the budget so far. It's for the Chancellor to make those announcements on the day she stands up there with the red box. So we will see. But we do need to make sure that we've got a system in this country that is fair, that is proportionate, and that brings in the investment that we need to get our economy moving again and our public services functioning. The key to that is to get the economy moving again after it flatlined for so many years. And all of us are doing what we can to support that, including in my case as the Housing Secretary, announced a big stimulus for house building in London last week so we can get a flatlining house building economy shifting so we can get people the homes they want to live in, but also that's jobs all over the capital and ultimately across the country.
Yours is a very challenging and in many ways exciting brief. How is Build Baby Build going, Secretary of State?
Well, you know, I announced, it is exciting. You know what, Nick? I think we can make a real difference in this brief.
Right.
Now, we've got, last year we had a third of London building no new homes. We can't have that. The house building in the capital fell off a cliff 3 years ago, and it's just flatlined ever since. So we've had to take drastic action, and I didn't shy away from it. So we're reducing the costs for developers so we can get spades in the ground and cranes in the sky to get building again. Once we do that, we see more homes of every kind being built. The homes that younger people need to be able to buy to get their first foot on the housing ladder, the homes that people want to be able to rent at an affordable rent, but also, very importantly, the social and affordable homes, and the government's allocated £39 billion to helping to build that so that we get the biggest number in a generation.
That's all very well, Secretary of State, but in reality, when spades get in the ground, you'll be aware the Home Builders Federation said that the number of new homes approved in England was 39,170 for the first quarter of this year. That's the lowest since 2012. Now, this is under Labour.
Yes.
I know you weren't Housing Secretary for the first 3 months, I understand that, but are we improved on where the figure was? Are we above 186,600? How many have we built this year to date?
Well, this year to date, 231,000 new homes this Parliament so far to date. But I'll tell you, this is a green shoot. This is a good news. The number of starts, that's where the new building starts to happen, up by 29% today over last year. But we need to stimulate it more. It's flatlining. It's been on the floor for around 3 years. So the reason I announced that stimulus package last week is to get London building again, and I will make further announcements over coming weeks to get house building moving up and down the country. It's one of the best levers we can pull to get the economy growing, but also if we want to tackle the housing crisis that we see across the whole of Britain right now, we have to get Britain building, and that is what I'm using my job to do.
Part of your brief is also, of course, Secretary of State for Communities. How can you say with a straight face you're keeping communities safe when a sex offender is released from jail and told how to get to the nearest railway station when he should have been deported?
It is absolutely shocking. I mean, your jaw will have been on the floor hearing that news over the weekend. Mine was too, and you know, everyone else will feel exactly the same way. That individual shouldn't have even been in the country, let alone carrying out the offence that he did, and he certainly should not have been released by accident. It's unbelievable how that could have happened, but I don't think it's a surprise to people that we have a broken criminal justice system. We know that at the time of the last general election, the prisons were full up. There were no spaces for criminals who were given a custodial sentence.
So it's the Conservatives' fault this bloke was released on the week, on Friday?
No.
Right.
There's a broken criminal justice system. A third of professional staff in the system had been removed under the previous government. We're working to fix it, but the kind of thing that happened this weekend, that kind of accidental release, should not have happened. The minister Ministry of Justice. David Lammy, as the Justice Secretary, has called an urgent inquiry. An individual has been suspended because of what happened, and David will be in the House of Commons later today to answer questions, but also to announce new checks that will be put in place before any prisoner is released to make sure there's no repeat.
Last minute or so together, all this adds, I would suggest, to a growing sense of despair, as was mentioned by your colleague, Health Secretary Wes Streeting.
There is a deep disillusionment in this country at the moment, and I would say growing sense of despair about whether anyone is capable of turning this country round.
Now, that's the Health Secretary. Do you concur, Mr. Reid?
Well, people voted for this.
Do you agree with him?
I recognise what he's saying. I do recognise that. We saw it in the Caerphilly by-election, didn't we? But
well, we did. We saw it in the turnout for your deputy leadership. It was 16.6%. Even the party faithful have lost confidence in you now.
Well, I think that involves a lot of trade union members who don't always take part in internal elections. But what we need to point to is the change we're making happen, because there is hope. People need to feel that there's hope. So Wes, speaking just there, is in charge of the National Health Service. We've got 5 million extra appointments now, and we're starting to see those waiting lists
come down. Well, he talked about despair, of course, on Sky News.
Well, it doesn't make me despair when I see waiting lists come down, nor does it make me despair when I see that we've increased the national minimum wage so that some of our lowest paid people in the workforce are getting a page rise. And nor does it make me despair when I see that we've banned the unfair bonuses that the water bosses were awarding themselves, and we've brought in the funding to clean up sewage from our rivers. So I think there's reasons for hope as well, Nick, to be honest.
Lastly, do you despair when one of your colleagues, Torsten Bell, is revealed to have bought, on public money, a £900 desk to help write the budget? A £900 desk. Would you need a desk that costs £900, Secretary of State?
I'm very happy with the desk that I've got.
So why does Mr. Bell need a £900 desk that apparently you can move up and down?
Well, I don't know. Maybe you'd need to ask Torsten that.
I'd like to ask him. And at the same time, I could perhaps ask him why he needed £596 for three chairs. This is the man who's helping write the budget, right? This is a country which you are doing your best to get growth, which is bankrupt, broken, bust currently, and we have someone who is writing the budget with a £900 desk and £600 worth of chairs. Is this some kind of joke from the Labour Party?
Well, I don't know the detail of the circumstances. I do know that we need to be very careful about how we spend every single pound.
Well, that's 1,500 quid on three chairs and a desk, for God's sakes.
Yeah, I don't know. I know. I've seen in the office where I am, people have those stand-up desks that go up and down. It's better for your posture, and perhaps he's got a condition I don't know about. But I don't want to speculate what I don't know, Nick. But I do know we need to be very careful with public money.
Grateful for your time. Good luck with bringing in AWAB's law, forcing initially social housing. But if the housing secretary has his way, it will be forced into the private sector as well. Steve Reid, Secretary of State for Housing, Community and Local Government, thanks for your time. You've taken us to 1 minute after eight. Let's get the latest LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Justice Secretary, David Lammy, is expected to set out details of an inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabati from prison. The asylum seeker, who will now be deported, was freed from jail by mistake last Friday and arrested in North London yesterday morning. He was sentenced last month for sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl and a woman in Epping. Professor Ian Aitchison, a former prison governor, has told Nick it's an example of a system in freefall.
What is really important for people to understand is that this is a spectacular failure in itself, but it is symptomatic of a much larger problem within the prison system. I mean, when Chelmsford was inspected and inspectors virtually walked out 5 years ago, they described a prison that was violent, unsafe, chaotic.
A report by MPs says ministers need to get a grip on the billions of pounds being squandered on asylum hotels. The Home Affairs Committee says a promise to end hotel use by 2029 risks under-delivery and further undermining public trust. The Home Office says it's already taking action to cut costs. Social landlords in England are now required to fix damp and mould issues within strict timescales. The law is named after two-year-old Awab Ishak, who died from mould exposure at his home in Rochdale. sale in 2020. His father had repeatedly raised the issue with his housing association. The housing secretary, Steve Reeds, told Nick it's only the first phase of the plan.
So we want to roll this scheme out to cover private rented tenants as well, and also other forms of danger in the home, including excess heat of the kind that we see in the summer with rising temperatures, and in the winter, of course, with excess cold, which can also be very damaging, particularly to vulnerable people's health.
A rapid blood test to help diagnose life-threatening conditions in children is being trialled on the NHS in England. It can fast-track diagnosis of conditions such as sepsis or meningitis. And Britain's Lando Norris has won the Mexican Grand Prix and taken the lead in the Formula One World Championship standings. The McLaren driver finished ahead of Ferrari's Charles Leclerc, with title holder Max Verstappen third. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 96.45 after closing up 67 on Friday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro. 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning dry for most by this afternoon, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some brands sponsor athletes for the glory, but not Quaker. We're real food, so we sponsor Team GB for the real stuff, the ugly stuff. The 5 a.m. alarms, the blisters, bruises, goggle marks and mountains of sweaty laundry. Because we know that getting to greatness takes a delicious helping of ugliness. And my word, our porridge is ugly. Look at the state of it. Quaker. Deliciously real, deliciously ugly. Sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight, Monday the 27th of October. Coming up in this hour, the Reform UK's newest MP forced on the back foot after saying that she was, quotes, driven mad by seeing TV commercials, quotes, full of black and Asian people. It does seem like you're talking back to the 1970s, doesn't it? We'll give you more details on that. Plus, to the United States, speaking from the White House last week, President Trump unveiling plans for why the East Wing had to be demolished to make room for a new ballroom which can take 999 guests.
I think it'll be one of the great ballrooms anywhere in the world, probably the finest ballroom ever built, and we're doing it no cost to the country. It's being put, the money's being put in by me and donors.
Has the health secretary got the right diagnosis? A growing sense of despair in this country that we just can't seem to fix anything or get anything done. Or something I put to one of his senior colleagues, Housing Secretary Steve Reid, just minutes ago.
What we need to point to is the change we're making happen, because there is hope. People need to feel that there's hope. So Wes, speaking just there, is in charge of the National Health Service. We've got 5 million extra appointments now.
And in this hour, my interview with Paul Gascoigne. You remember that famous wedding to Shirley? Hello or OK?
She wanted to do Hello Magazine, I wanted to do OK. And OK offered 100 grand and Hello 150. Well, I wanted to go with OK because obviously the curse of the Hello Magazine. Hello! Well, and hello, mate. And obviously we did get divorced.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Reform UK's newest MP, Sarah Pochin, has been forced to apologise. But let's deal with this chronologically. The Runcorn and Helsby MP was on Talk TV and was asked by a caller about the demographics of advertising.
Drives me mad when I see adverts full of black people, full of Asian people. And I feel that, you know, your average white person, average white family is not represented. It's something that's happened because, I believe, of the woke liberality that goes on inside, you know, this sort of like in the arty-farty world. You know, when it comes to, you know, northern towns like Runcorn that I represent, you know, I mean, it's just not representative of the rest of the country.
Reform UK's head of policy, Zia Youssef, was speaking with Sky News yesterday and addressed those comments made by his colleague. He gave this defence.
I know Sarah very well. I was instrumental in her selection as a candidate, worked very hard to get her elected, and I'm extremely glad that I did. I consider her a close friend, and she's a great MP for Runcorn. She did say those words, and she has apologised, saying that it was a poorly phrased thing to say. But you've got to put that into context. The caller, a gentleman called Stuart, had called in, and I think he was rightfully upset about the massive underrepresentation of some groups in television advertising.
Condemnation, however, came from all sides of the political spectrum, including Health Secretary Wes Streeting on LBC.
What she said was a total disgrace. There is no explanation for what she said other than her words were racist. Now, she might be embarrassed by her racism now, but the least she can do is admit it and apologise for it. And as a country, we cannot allow what has been, I think, one of the most successful multi-faith, multicultural countries in the world to slide back to the days where people walk down the street afraid of being abused or attacked because of what they look like or who they worship. That is not who we are. That is not the kind of country we are. And we're not going back there. But we will only be able to confront and defeat this racism if we're prepared to call it out and if the vast majority of decent people are prepared to face it down and not be bystanders. She should be utterly ashamed of herself. And the deafening silence from her own party leadership show that Reform UK cannot be trusted to govern this country because they think our country's flag belongs to only some of us rather than all of us.
Well, where the Health Secretary needs to calm down a little bit and where the MP is wrong is that she is, quote, driven mad. That's absurd. But there is fact to what she says. The agency Tapestry for the sixth year audited the top 500 adverts across all broadcasters over two separate four-week periods, and their research was published in the Times earlier this month. It found that the proportion of adverts featuring black people has gone to 51%. Black people make around 5% of the population of England and Wales. Meanwhile, people from a South Asian background, according to Tapestry research, figured in 17% of adverts. They account for around 8% of the population. So it is true that there is an overrepresentation. The problem for Ms. Poaching is that it, quote, drives her mad. Why? What's to get angry about? OK, there is overrepresentation, but I don't know why it would drive you mad. Paul Burke is a multi-award-winning advertising copywriter and columnist for The Spectator. So you actually work in both industries, Paul. What are advertisers trying to get across, then, by this overrepresentation, do you imagine? Good morning.
I think what happened was there was a time, without a doubt, when there weren't enough, when any black or Asian people in ads, despite there being a growing number of black and Asian people in the UK. So they decided quite rightly to correct that. The trouble is, I think they all decided it at exactly the same time. And they perhaps overcorrected it because the facts, you know, the figures speak for themselves. And it gives an unrealistic portrait of the UK population. And the danger is, I mean, I live in London. I was born and bred in Brent, the most multiracial borough in the country. Mm. But even I would think, God, if I didn't know, I'd think, blimey. So people that don't know are then given a false idea of how many black and Asian people there are in the country, and that can fuel the far right, and that's not a good thing.
So the reality is, the evidence found by Tapestry, published by The Times, is there. But it's the reaction of the MP that, to me anyway, I don't know if you, Paul, causes disquiet. Paul?
Yes. Her choice of words was unfortunate, and to say it drives her mad is a bad thing to say. It smacks of racism, though what I think she really meant was it drives her mad to see a representation of the UK that's so obviously false. And then Wes Streeting just jumped. Well, politicians do that. We'd be disappointed if he didn't.
So you've won a ton of awards as an advertising copywriter. Where do you see the industry going now? Does it slightly need to address this?
They will. They'll look at that report from Tapestry, and then that gives them, if you like, the excuse they need. Because nobody wanted to be the first one to say, hang on a minute, this isn't realistic. So they will go, yes, we've looked at the data, and lessons have been learned, and we're now going to present a more truthful representation. I can see it coming out now. And all it is they should have been more truthful and representative in the first place.
Lastly, how challenging is it in that particular industry to be an advertising copywriter? It is absolutely, it's beyond the zeitgeist. You have to be ahead of the zeitgeist, don't you?
You're supposed to be. The trouble is, and I could go on, if you got till about midday, I could go on about how, and I'm sure it's the same in broadcasting, it certainly is in television and comedy. It's a really weird thing to say, but it was sort of colonised by uncool people who thought, hey, let's do this. They don't really have a sense of humour. and so they think they're being right on. They'd be mortified if you told them that overrepresenting black and Asian people is not truthful. They think that's cool. And
I don't know how you stick in it. Paul, I have enjoyed our conversation. Paul Burke is a multi-award-winning advertising copywriter and columnist for The Spectator, so effectively wearing two hats. Narinder Kaur is a broadcaster and social commentator. Deafening silence from Nigel Farage so far. What does he need to do in your view? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning to the listeners. I have to say, Paul worried me even more than Sarah's comment. I tell you why, Nick, because if you think advertisers are paying for adverts to be woke or pick DEI boxes, I've got a bridge to sell you. They're just trying to sell stuff to everyone. And everyone's missing the point here that these adverts are whether overrepresenting or just therefore suggesting that we could have some kind of apartheid system in adverts. The fact is buyers support DEI and buyers like to see multi-ethnicities, multi-racial adverts. It's really that simple. It's not a case of over-representation because actually South Asians are underrepresented and Sarah didn't seem to be bothered about under-representation. Nigel
Farage, when you say they're underrepresented, they appear in 17% of advertisements and they account for 8% of the population.
So well, actually, there's so many different stats out there, and I think there's so many out there, Nick, and I think the problem we get into is we start laundering racism, and I think the hard right are pushing the boundaries of abusing ethnic minorities every day, every week. We're hearing too many black and brown people in Handsworth, too many black and brown people in adverts. This isn't acceptable for Britain. Black and brown people matter. Adverts are just trying to sell stuff to everyone in that one-minute advert. For Paul to sit there and say, well, actually, it's not representative of society. Adverts aren't meant to reflect society. They're just trying to sell stuff. It's that simple, Nick.
All right. I'm very grateful for your input. Thank you. Narinder Kaur is a broadcaster and social commentator. Peter's in Stirling. Peter, your reaction. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Firstly, I think the defence that it's poor phrasing is a bit pathetic, don't you think? I mean, this is a woman who's been in politics 10 years. She went to university. She's 56. She's a woman of the world, and she's intelligent. She knows exactly what she said.
Well, I don't know these poor comments phrasing. Are that intelligent, are they? Do you think? What do you think?
No, I don't think these comments were intelligent at all. But I think that this is her pandering once again. Do you remember in the summer when she made that lie about, was it Greenway Road in her constituency? And then they went down there and found that all the constituents were like, what are you on about?
I might have been away. I'm sorry, I don't recall that story, but go on. Sorry.
She said that there was a problem with the HMOs in that street where everyone was asylum seekers and the residents weren't safe.
I think I was away. Right.
They then asked
getting married.
Everyone
right.
there. I think she's decided that that's the crowd she wants to be in with. It's the people muttering angrily in the corner about, oh, there's too many blacks and there's too many Asians and I don't like seeing all these people. Does anyone actually care what goes on in advertising? Normally, I'd skip the adverts if I can. I don't care what the guy who sells me a sofa looks like, to be honest, Nick. I don't think you care either.
I just want the sofa to be good value for money and for it to last, and my grandchildren will be jumping on it without falling apart. Peter, we're going to take more calls on this. Thank you. We cross the water to the United States. Well, fortunately, the West Wing is just fine, but the East Wing, Bob the Builder's in, and they've demolished it without any permission or go-ahead at all, simply because the President wanted to, and he wants the biggest ballroom, the biggest ballroom ever. We'll give you more details in the next hour. 8:16, LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
The asylum seeker Hadish Kabatu is expected to be deported this week after he was released from prison by mistake. A committee of MPs says ministers must set out a clear strategy to fix the broken asylum accommodation system. And social landlords could now face court action or have to pay compensation if they fail to address mould and damp issues. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers this morning, drier later, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M1 northbound up to Junction 6 at Brickett Wood. It's following an accident. A southbound is open but very busy from the M25 because of onlookers. Also, it's still very slow on the M25 clockwise at Junction 27 at the M11. And that was after an accident. In Newell, the Cheam Road remains closed at westbound. In Forest Hill, the South Circular Road is partially blocked both ways. And also in West Hampstead, there are delays on the A41 Finchley Road southbound. And that's because of an accident. It's taking at least least 20 minutes to get through that queue. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the District Line between Wimbledon and Parsons Green, and that's all down to a signal failure at East Putney.
This is LBC.
Two Costa lattes for Abby.
The family calendar's already overflowing. Christmas parties, visiting the in-laws, and endless wrapping. But here, in this Costa coffee date, everything slows. Just a pair of hands held together and another holding mugs. You smile, promising to do this more before the season sweeps you away again. It's more than a latte. It's a Costa Christmas catch-up. Costa coffee, made with heart.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Imagine the varifocal lens of the future. Personalised to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behaviour. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at Essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
19 minutes after 8, the row then involving the reformed UK MP and deafening silence so far from Nigel Farage. David's in Macclesfield. How big a deal is this for you, David? Good morning.
It's a big deal in that people, you know, the zealots have reacted in a way which is totally incorrect. I mean, look, it's like the ingredients on a kind of soup or a cake or something. You know what I mean? If the ingredients are falsely stated on the back of a tin of soup, then it's wrong.
Well, hold on, let's slow down a little bit. I mean, we're talking about human beings here, so I'm a little nervous to talk about them as a can of soup. But the problem is that it, quotes, drives her mad, makes her mad. I mean, that is at best a little strange, isn't it, that you could be angered by something like this?
Yeah, just there's some crazy people out there just now, and it's about time they got put in their place.
I don't understand what you're saying. I'm sorry. I'm sure it's my fault. Are you saying that this is not a row or that she needs to be put in her place?
No, she does not need put in her place. She said absolutely nothing wrong.
But hold on. Now I think I'm onto it. Now, David, does it make you mad to see to see black people on TV commercials?
Not at all, but let's represent them.
Okay. But then surely it is of concern that this MP, a supposed lawmaker, it makes her mad. I mean, that's a real concern, right?
Wait a minute, I'm going to move a room. It's a bad line.
Okay, let's ring you back. Maybe we can wonder whether we should have taken that one. Kel's in Harrow, you're on the radio. Kel, good morning.
Nick, there's a saying that if one person says it, 10 people are thinking it. So she has definitely represented. Oh, there's definitely a saying. I even say this as a driving instructor, that if one person is saying something to me about something that they're not happy about, I've got to now get feedback from others. So basically, just to get more to the point, is that this lady is representing some, if not a lot of the part of this country of what they're thinking. When they're watching
TV. Is she representing you?
Oh, well, I'm African Caribbean, so she's saying something like that, and you quoted the word 5%. From what I heard, there's 3-4% of us in this country. For Indians, it was 7%. You're saying 8%. Okay, let's go with the most recent stats. But we have represented this country for many years, and we're talking obviously since Windrush. Yeah. And the thing is that you've had that, and I have to make this comparison with that Dylan person you spoke about with Palestine, and he could be now accused of anti-Semitism. Things that this has said about the African Caribbean community and certain things that have gone on, and nothing gets done.
Kel, if you're watching TV and someone comes up who's eating cornflakes or driving a car or, I don't know, cleaning the floor, does skin colour, do you notice skin colour?
They're selling the advert. I mean, it's beautiful to see people living their beautiful lives on TV, being Indian, being black, being Chinese. We love seeing that. So where colour comes into it, to us, is absolutely pathetic. But I'm saying to you, it's very interesting this has happened with this Dilling brother and this young lady from that stupid idiot Nigel Farage's... sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But from that campaign of people that do the whole government thing or they're trying to get in, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen with those two cases now. Because now we're now going to see in front of our face who's going to basically be reprimanded. That lady should lose her job.
All right. We're still waiting to hear, of course, what the party leader does. Kel, thank you. Let's feature... I realise I've not done at all on so... I don't know if I've done any, so whoa. JC, it drives me mad as a figure of speech. Must everything be turned into a drama? Nawaz, do you think the advertisers confer with each other? Barclays have a black person, so HSBC and NatWest will too. All ads run and it looks like so many non-white people appearing on the adverts. She is a racist and needs to resign. Same subject. This comes from Kathy in Edinburgh. It's annoying because it is positive discrimination. I don't know whether you mean you support positive discrimination or you're against it. NK is in Redbridge. NK, your view. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I just want to say I can't believe what I'm hearing. I mean, talking about over-representation in ads, is she also going to the police and talking about under-representation of ethnic minorities? As far as I'm concerned, I mean, her statement is a Trojan horse in order to...
In what way? What is she trying to bring in, then, to use your knowledge, keep your analogy going?
Well, I mean, the whole thing about are you counting how many ethnic minority people are being given work in advertising? It's nothing to do with her. If adverts want to portray a certain society and say that, listen, we live in, you know, multiracial times, I don't understand why it's her business.
What would you say to her, lastly, NK?
Well, what I would say to her is that if that is her idea of what it is to be an MP, then I'm sorry, but I think it's a really kind of tragic state.
NK, thanks for your views. David in Putney, do you notice someone's colour when they're trying to sell you cornflakes? Good morning.
Absolutely not. I ask for their name, I ask for how they're doing, and that is just about it. I don't understand why people can be mad over a 9% difference in representation. It's an insignificant number if you consider the wider, like, proportions of things. And at the end of the day, to actually be mad about an overrepresentation of 9% when you still consider the majority.
You're talking about you're talking about Asians now as opposed to black people.
Yeah.
But the tapas, yeah, okay, go ahead. Yeah, just so I clarify. Yep.
This is like extraordinarily, like, I want to say comical, but it's sad at the same time.
Why is it sad?
It's sad because there's now been a divide is being created. It's somehow they're being overrepresented, and that's an issue to me because for some reason I'm still the majority, but I'm not majority enough. Like, you were really feeling this insecure about yourself as a cultural person because there is somehow this creeping invasion of Arabics and Muslims and blacks. It's wild to me that we think that that's a thing when we can go back 100 years and we can consider what these people did for our country, what they did for Europe, and what we did to them.
Thank you, David. Ray in East Mosey, how far will things go with representation of ethnic groups? We often hear certain regional accents are overused because they are received very well for listeners of certain ads. Do we now need to make this an issue? Jim in Tenterden, the silent majority think the same about the demographics of advertising, but are too frightened to say it out loud for fear of being shouted down like this poor woman. It's patronising to ethnic minorities that white middle-class advertising agencies are jumping on the bandwagon of the wokerati. Let's put a black face in the advert to show how trendy our white middle-class agency is, says Jim. Andrew's in 8:27 the time. Andrew's in Paddington. Andrew, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. You are, as always, the best radio journalist in the UK.
I'm done, what am I? Good. I'm a what journalist? I didn't... good.
Best radio
Oh, best!
Journalist.
Oh, well, that was very sweet. Oh, my God, I don't think so. Crikey, blimey, if I'm the best, we are in trouble.
I think the way she's put it is shocking.
Yep.
But I think underlying it is a point. The pendulum never goes to 90 degrees. It goes to 180 degrees and then moves back slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and here I'm going to talk about mixed-race couples. It's not just the representation of non-Caucasians. It's the fact that if you watch adverts on television, you would believe there were no pure Caucasian couples left in the UK. So the pendulum has gone to 180 degrees, as I say.
But does it... I think that's fair, what you say. The numbers are borne out by... But does it make you mad, Andrew? That's where I think the MP's herself has gone nuts.
Oh, emphatically not. I mean, it... you know, it's an overreaction on the part of the advertisers, but it's a shocking overreaction on her part. Can I be a little bit of a wag and say, I have to conclude from all of this that non-Caucasian people have very clean loos?
I think we can let that stand. Thank you for that. I'm watching an ad break as we speak, Andrew. So far, it's one white person, two white people, a cat and a dog. But I'll let you know how we get through this ad break. So that's two... Hang on! Four white people, a cat and a dog. Five white people, a cat and a dog. A lot of shoes now. Hang on. Oh, this is a terrible. This is these old people saying goodbye. That's six white, one mixed race. That's the same person. That's the same person. I know this is a fascinating radio. Oh, here we... Oh, my God. That's gone to 9-2 from this ad break. What's this one? Last one before we go to the news. Here we go. Here we go. Oh, no, this is just something. I don't know what that advert's all about. I'm completely clueless. What am I meant to do? Buy it? Eat it? I don't know. Might be the last one. Okay, so that concludes. I think the ad break might be coming to an end. 9-2, one cat and one dog. And I don't feel offended. I don't feel mad at all. Perhaps there's a problem with me. All right, coming up after the news, I had the opportunity last week to speak with one of England's greatest sportsmen. Oh, hang on. Hang on. You make that 11-3 now. 12-3. I better get on. To speak to one of England's greatest sportsmen, the legendary Paul Gascoigne. He told this story after he received a letter from Fergie, Sir Alex Ferguson. He turned him down to play for Manchester United. He'd come south to Spurs instead.
I got first fan mail at Tottenham and I thought, ooh, fan mail, get in. I was excited. I hoped it was from Fergie. Not very nice. You stupid fat he called me.
We'll play you the one that's been very carefully edited for the wireless and I'll tell you how you can get the other one. That's all coming up. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
The government is expected to set out details of an independent inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabatu, the asylum seeker who will now be deported, was freed from jail by mistake last Friday and arrested in North London yesterday morning. A report by MPs says the government has to get a grip on the UK's failed migrant accommodation system. Ministers have promised to end the housing of asylum seekers in hotels by the next election. New rules requiring social landlords in England to fix damp and mould issues quickly have come into force. The law is named after 2-year-old Awam Ishak, who died from mould exposure at his home in Rochdale in 2020. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning drier for most by the afternoon. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Now, let me ask y'all a question. Are you ready to ditch the crowds and the cookie-cutter holidays? I'm talking quiet mornings spent by crystal clear lakes, cruising across the vast landscapes of Canada and the U.S. at a leisurely pace, stopping at charming towns and saying howdy. Go deeper with littleamerica.co.uk.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, oh. Always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. Yes. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh. They make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe it's time for varifocals.
At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
It's 8:32 and we shall return to our conversation concerning the Reform UK MP, if not later in this hour, certainly in the next hour. Because we're going to be speaking, by the way, later with the former Housing Secretary, Michael, now Lord Gove, after the introduction of AWAB's law, as outlined to us by the current Housing Secretary, of course, because Mr Gove, as he was then, worked a lot on that. But away from politics and away from TV advertising and into the world of sport. And last week I was fortunate to interview the England footballing legend, Paul Gascoigne, better known, of course, as Gazza. It was a wide-ranging and unforgettable conversation. We discussed his decision to play for Spurs or Tottenham Hotspur over Manchester United, his £150,000 wedding back in 1996, and, oh, that missed goal against Germany in the semi-finals of Euro 96. I know some of you weren't around. I appreciate that. But if you were, you'll never forget. He just slides in. I'll ask him about that. But the interview was for the publication of his new book, 8, The Real Gazza, which is out now. It's very self-reflective. So I started off by asking Gazza what had been his biggest regret.
Getting seeing the number 8 come from Professor Spudchik, whoever he is. What would be bigger regret? I think it's probably when I it's got to be taking that cocaine when I went and seen Raoul Moat. I've never touched it since. I went psychotic. It was quite scary, to be fair. But looking off my dad's section, me for 11 days, you know, I went cold turkey and thought, oof, never again. So that was quite, I regret that. And obviously, regards football-wise, it's probably the tackle on Gary Charles in the cup final where I scored in every round and then lasted 12 minutes. The morphine was good, though.
Coming back to that Raoul Moat incident, Paul, you actually thought he was your twin brother and that's why you did what you did.
Well, when I was taking that cocaine and the brandy mix, you know, eventually, I didn't even know about it because I didn't know a couple of days beforehand he had shot a cop and, I mean, killed someone and shot a cop in the face. I didn't even know that until I put the TV on. I thought, oh, I think I know him. And then eventually, after a couple of more lines, then I was like, oh, yeah, he's my off-brother. Him, I think he needs help. Because I'd been to rehab a few times, I thought I was a good therapist. Obviously, backfired a little bit. It wasn't until the next morning, I thought, what did I do yesterday? I couldn't remember nothing. And it was only when I put on Sky News and I just went, oh, F. And then my phone went straight away. I had about 300 missed calls, 300 texts. And I think they were from my dad. And then he got a few guys, police undercover, to come pick us up. And then they took us straight to where the nut house, the men's room, which he did as a favour, to be fair.
Let me ask you this. I've been speaking with our mutual friend Ben Shepherd at ITV. He tells me the most extraordinary story that you could have signed for Spurs when you were about to sign for Manchester United, but Terry Venables made you a series of offers which changed your mind. Take us back to that, if you would.
Well, I spoke to Alex Ferguson, and I was going to sign for him, and I says, go and join your holiday, I'll sign for you when I come back, I'll be at Old Trafford. So he was excited. And then I said to my dad, I kept on saying to my dad, oh, Man United, fantastic. And then the phone went, and I went, to the Scholar Spurs, what do you want? And one thing was Tottenham. I said, Dad, it's Tottenham. My dad went, tell him to F off. She's the same for Man United. So I went, oh, my dad says, I'm saying for Man United. So he went, well, I'll give my dad a house for 120 grand. So I told my dad went, what the F are you waiting for then, son? So then my mum went, well, but that was, and he said, I want a car. So my mum got that. So when I was on the way, I passed Old Trafford. I was shaking a bit. I went, he's going to go off it. And then when I was 100 yards from the ground, the phone went to my sister. I went, what do you want? She went, well, if your mum's getting a house, my dad's getting a car, I want an effing sunbed. So I think the deal was done on a sunbed. The sunbed was unbelievable, though. It was like a 10 grand sunbed. It blew up the house. It blew the bulbs up in our house. So, yeah, so and then I was, you know, Terry Bellman was a great guy. It was a big miss. I was with Katie when he passed away and I started crying, you know. He's an unbelievable bloke, you know. And then... I mean, with that season, we finished the Man United, then all of a sudden he brought on the Betts, the Giggs, the Scholes, Butts, Nevilles, and then obviously they won the league. So, but, you know, I have no regrets going to Tottenham. I loved it there as well, like, you know.
So you had to say to Fergie, I'm not coming up, boss.
No, I panicked. I just got to remember when I got first fan mail at Tottenham, and I thought, oh, fan mail getting. I was excited to open it. It was from Fergie. Not very nice. You stupid fat he called me. So he went a bit off it. It took me 6 years to get speaking to him. But I met him. I went to a Man United game about a few years ago with Katie and the kids and that. And even then, I got a guy come up to us in the players' lounge. He went, Fergie wants to see you in his office. I just thought, I went, oh, no. And he went, I still can't forget you not saying for me. He gives a at 82 years of age and I was still shaking. So, yeah, he's some guy.
Well, he is incredible. But you're some bloke too, Paul. Paul Gascoigne, what makes you happy?
I love tennis. The weather's been but I mean, fly fishing. I love fly fishing. I mean, it's the only sport I do that really. I mean, I've won trophies for table tennis, badminton, tennis, but I mean, fly fishing's the only sport I know that takes my mind away from everything, you know, until I put the rod away. And then, fly fishing, that really more than anything else.
Let's talk more about the book, Eight, The Real Gazza. What did you learn about yourself from writing that, Paul?
Well, I just thought so many people have a lot to say about me, but they don't even know me, you know. I don't give myself away that easy unless I'm doing a book like this, which I've given all warts and alls in. I just thought, you know, why not? I was speaking to Katie and I said, the offer come to a book. And I said, well, look, if I'm going to do a book, I want to put everything in. I don't want to leave anything out. So if I go to my grave, then everyone knows. But I think the press wrote so much about this that the whole country know exactly what I did. So, you know, I just added a bit more, just told them everything what I go through, you know, from a day-to-day thing, especially when I packed in football. You know, I got all these OCDs, alcoholic and addict, everything, really, the jealousy side of it, the fear. If you have dying, just everything, and I just let it all out. And then, and I'm not a good sleeper. I'm happy if I get two to three hours sleep a day. But after doing a book, I slept perfect for a couple of days.
Right, young footballers coming into the game now, all the temptations there are, the extraordinary money that they can make. What would your advice be?
Didn't get married. Yeah, I mean, I was on good money at that. I mean, you think about 30-odd years ago, I was on 100 grand a month, but we got taxed 60, and then I got a cheque for a couple of million. But, they've got nothing to worry about, money, the players nowadays. You know, I see some players have gone 300, 500 grand a week, and they can't even trap a bag of cement. But then you see some players, like, on the bench, and you think, I wouldn't like that, you know. Some players are happy to sit on the bench and just get their wages. Well, if it was me, I'd move, you know, go to another club. But yeah. Good luck to them. I wish them all the best, making as much money as they can, because, you know, they are scrutinized. But I hate to be a player nowadays, because the only fact is the players' wages get more publicity than the footballers. It's brilliant. I love it. I mean, the World Cup, the last World Cup was embarrassing. I mean, it was all about the wags. Jesus yeah. Christ. That's a nightmare, you know. And I mean, when we were Sir Bobby Robson, he wouldn't let me read the papers, what was going on back home, read the newspapers, nothing. It was only the semi-final when the waves come over, and I thought we're going to get beat, and we did. But, you know, the players, the waves go out, meet the players, and go out for lunch and dinner, and it's not good. It's really just focused for like 5 weeks on that, or a few weeks on that World Cup, you know. We're going to have sex when they get back home.
You'll always regret your marriage, I think. Is that right, Paul?
Well, yeah, I didn't really get married as such, you know. I think it was just at the spur of the moment. I was like, finished Euro 96. I was buzzing. I won every award up in Glasgow Rangers, won Players of the Year, Players, Sports Writers. And I won every award and that. And then I was just on a high. And then I said, yeah. And then obviously I had the Regan. And then I decided to get married, you know. And it wasn't it's not what I really wanted, to be fair. But I think it was the only chance I had to see my son. And we only lived together for 3 months over all them years, you know. So, yeah, I do, you know, in the time when you're in it, it's okay, you know. But then I just remember, you know, my side of the family were crying and their side. But when she said yes, when she said I do, you just heard a few voices from her side say yes. And I just went, you know, it wasn't good. I just thought, but she has never made.
your wedding was priced at £150,000 all those years ago. Have I got that right?
Well, you know, it was had Hello Magazine or OK Magazine. Now, I know the people in Hello Magazine, the ones that get married and use Hello Magazine, they, what's it called? They're the ones that split up all the time. And she wanted to do Hello Magazine, I wanted to do OK. And OK offered $100,000 and Hello $150,000. Well, I wanted to go with OK because obviously the curse of the Hello Magazine. Hello. Well, and hello me. And obviously we did get divorced. I mean, we only lived together for 3 months. So it wasn't a great experience. But at least I got to play football on my own. So that was all right.
Last couple of questions. Take you back to Euro 96. Is it fair if your studs had been just a little bit longer, that ball would have gone into the back of the net? You missed it by an absolute whisker.
Yeah, I mean, if me was a little bit, would have knocked it in by that. No, I was, I was just a couple of inches off, or an inch, you know. I think if I was Shearer the other way around, he would have scored at Olinica because obviously their instinct. But I just honestly thought the keeper was going to get a touch. I had the celebrations all worked out and unbelievable. But I met him a couple of years ago. Well, I seen him a couple of years ago at Wembley, Gareth Southgate. I mean, Gareth, I cannot understand this. I scored my penalty and I end up in rehab for 5 weeks. You missed your penalty. You get a £30,000 pizza advert in England manager's job. What the hell did I do wrong? So he hates it. He went, don't tell anyone that. I went, yeah, the whole country knows Gareth. But he did well for England as well. So proud of him. But yeah, you're 96. You know, now and again, I kind of watched that game. Because I keep on thinking about that goal, you know, even now, when I see clips of it, and I think, God, if I'd have scored that, the celebrations all worked out and everything.
Well, what would those celebrations have been?
Blows off, run around the stadium naked, and then dive. There's a big bath at Wembley, dive in there, to show my soul or something.
What we missed at Euro 96, Paul Gascoigne, 8, the real Gazza is out now. Now, you can also watch, and do not go there if you are easily offended. Do not go there if you're below the age of 18. Do not go there if you don't like foul language or colloquialisms from men's genitalia. Do not go there. I can't make it. Do not listen. If, however, you want to hear the full unexpurgated, the director's cut, the uncensored version, it's on the LBC app, lbc.co.uk. or on the LBC YouTube channel. But do not go there if you are easily offended. Coming up in the next hour, we cross the Atlantic. Don't worry, the West Wing is fine, but Trump has demolished the East Wing for the biggest ballroom you've ever seen. But there's a degree of fury. We'll look at that in the next hour. 8:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The government is expected to set out details of an independent inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabatu. A report by MPs says the government must get a grip on the UK's failed migrant accommodation system and new rules requiring social landlords in England to fix damp and mould issues more quickly have come into force. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning drier later. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M1 northbound to Junction 6 at Brickett Wood. It's because a car has overturned. Two lanes are closed and there are delays southbound all the way back to Junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead because of onlookers. There's been another accident on the M25 clockwise at Junction 27 at the M11. Only one lane is open and that's causing delays back to Junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. In Purley, the A22 Godstone Roads had to be closed both ways following an accident. And in the Cheam Road is closed westbound for emergency repair works. Also for emergency repair works, there are restrictions on the South Circular Road at Forest Hill, and that's causing delays in both directions.
This is LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18-plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Mark's best friend Ben follows him around. Ben's there when he wakes up in the morning. there when he goes to the pub. He's there at dinner time. He never leaves him. Ben died in Iraq in 2004. The trauma of that day has never left Mark. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems. Combat Stress, for veterans' mental health. Search Combat Stress to support our work.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
There's some naughty folks out there in cyberspace, and it can be tough to tell a legit deal from a dodgy one. That's why you need Bitdefender, your very own digital heavyweight, working silently behind the scenes to keep you and your devices safe. Whatever threats the web throws at you. Trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted. Always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
Right, it's coming up on, it's just almost at 10 minutes before 9 is the time, and it was exactly an hour ago, you might recall, that he was speaking with the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, about the introduction of, and this has been featured as a story on the LBC News Bulletin, this Awab's Law. This was after Awab Ishak died in December 2020 from a respiratory condition caused by prolonged exposure to mould in his family's housing association flat in Rochdale, which is in Greater Manchester. The death caused national outrage and prompted the passage of the law, and indeed we're going to be speaking with the Home Secretary, the Housing Secretary, then Michael Gove, in just a moment. Now, what the government is saying is that this now will form the basis of this law. Social renters make up almost a quarter of people with issues of damp, mould or cold in their homes, says a survey, as these new rules come into effect. You might recall the Housing Secretary saying that everyone deserves a safe and decent home to live in, and Awab Ishak was a powerful reminder of how this can sadly become a matter of life or death. There are plans to try and extend it into the private sector as well. But here's a little of what the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, told me in the first hour of the show.
Today, you'll know the background, but Awab Ishak was born living in accommodation that was full of damp and mould of the most dangerous kind. And his parents raised it with their landlord, but they couldn't get any action. And tragically, unspeakably, a few days after his second birthday, Awab died. What we're bringing into force today are new rules that will compel social landlords to act at pace within 24 hours for the most serious cases like that one to put right the kind of circumstances that led to that child's death and elsewhere in the country would have led to very, very serious health consequences for not just babies, but other vulnerable older people, individuals with health conditions in a way that we should never have tolerated.
Well, that's the current Housing Secretary there, but it was started under a former Housing Secretary, who I'm pleased to say I can bring onto the show now, Michael, now Lord Gove. Am I allowed to call you Michael, my Lord, or was that a desperately offensive move for me to do that?
No, Nick, you're allowed to call me Michael. You can always call me Michael. You can even use words of one syllable.
What about Mike Bongovi? Would that be pushing it a little bit, Michael?
Well, I'm delighted. That I also understand John Bon Jovi is back.
He is back. No, right, Mr. Bongovi. No, let's go to the serious matters. The law has come about. This was because of the tragic circumstances involving that young. Why did you feel so personally motivated about this, Michael?
Well, the case, I think, would have hit any parent incredibly hard. You had this tragically young child who was living in grotesque circumstances, whose life was lost as a result of the neglect of social landlords. And let's be clear about this. Social landlords, in this case a housing association, but it can be local authorities, are the people who are paid for by us in some cases, elected directly by us to look after us. And you had this tragic case of a child who was in circumstances that that shame the country. There's a big problem with a small proportion of our housing, where people are just living in conditions that are completely inappropriate, unsafe, and in this case, lethal.
As you and your colleagues started to drill into the details concerning this, what were some of the stories that they turned up, Michael?
What was striking is that there are a number of local authorities who are responsible for social housing, for what used to be called council houses, who've let their housing stock, the individual homes in which people live, decay and decline so that you've got mold, rot, fungus growing in people's homes. And the landlord here is ultimately someone who relies on their salary from the taxpayers. So some of the folk who run a housing association, they both do a good job, but they're earning more than the Prime Minister. And yet at the same time, there are people who are living in circumstances that you or I wouldn't keep a dog in. So it's just, it was absolutely horrendous. Now, there is a problem in that some of these homes were built in the 50s and 60s, and they're reaching the end of their natural life. But it's still the case that we do need to make sure that people have somewhere decent to call their home.
Let's talk a little about the private sector. Almost literally an hour ago, Steve Reid, the housing secretary, says he's keen to push this into the private sector. What are the hurdles he'll have to clear, Michael?
Well, I think the first thing is that there's a new bill, which is just about to become law, Steve Reid may have talked about, which is there to ensure that the small minority of perniciously bad landlords can't evict people. That law has to be in place before it can, these new provisions can be extended to the private sector. But there is one thing that we do need to bear in mind, which is that the overwhelming majority of private landlords do an amazingly good job. We need a healthy private rented sector. And while no one should be living in a home that isn't decent, we do need to make sure that the balance is struck between renters' rights and the freedom of landlords to let their property.
In a related conversation, in almost, I think, the final hours of the previous government, you pushed through the Leasehold and Freehold Reform Act. On Friday, the government won in the High Court as some of the wealthiest landowners, including the Duke of Westminster, lost their judicial review. There's now talk of a possible appeal. How confident are you that your Reform Act will actually stick?
I'm very confident. I think that the judgment that we had handed down on Friday was a vindication of the approach that we took. And even though obviously I'm a Tory, I'm glad that this Labour government defended the approach that we took in the courts. What it means is that big landlords like the Duke of Westminster, nothing against him personally, of course, fellow peer. But nevertheless, what it means is that those people who own vast estates and who own the freehold of the estates can't jack up the ground rent, can't exploit people who've bought flats. As many listeners will know, in large parts of the country, you can only buy flats on what's called a leasehold basis. That means you save up, you get a mortgage, you pay hundreds of thousands of pounds. But then, ultimately, the ownership of the flat rests with someone who is distant and unaccountable and who can increase the ground rent for you. Of course, you sometimes need someone to ensure that the common parts of a block of flats are looked after. But there's no reason why that can't be done by the people who own the flats themselves.
Last minute or so together, can I get you on the current state of politics in this country? Wes Streeting, the health secretary, said on the weekend, and I quote, "There's a growing sense of despair in this country that nothing can be fixed." This comes after the turnout for the deputy leadership of the Labour Party was 16.6%. What does that say about the stewardship of the United Kingdom to you, Michael Gove?
It's deeply depressing. Again, I want to be fair. Now, I'm no longer a full-time politician. I think Wes Streeting, as health secretary, has actually made some progress in cutting waiting lists. And I think Shabana Mahmood, the home secretary, is genuinely intent on doing the right thing with regard to criminals and illegal migrants. But the rest of them, honestly, and I think that Keir Starmer has proven a massive disappointment as prime minister over the course of the last 15 months. Almost everything he set his hand to has either mouldered or failed. And I think that the deputy leadership election was a vote of no confidence in him from his own activists, because they voted for the woman, Lucy Powell, whom he'd sacked.
Lastly, For those who have never experienced The Spectator, for those who might have subscribed and perhaps have gone missing, why should they come back? Why should they join your happy band?
The Spectator is the single most entertaining thing that you can read every week. We have brilliant writers, Rod Liddell, Douglas Murray, Maddie Grant, who have an original and witty take on the week's events. If you can imagine bottling Nick Ferrari and then putting it on the page, then you've got The Spectator.
You old flatterer. Lord Gove, thank you so much for your time. Editor of The Spectator, the driving force initially behind that law, which has come into force as of today. Michael Gove, thanks for your time. James in Barnet wants to talk about our conversation. James, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. State agent in Barnet many, many years. The witch hunt for both social landlords and private landlords about condensation is a joke. Condensation is actually caused by occupier-induced.
But not mould, though, is it, James?
Yes, it's moisture.
Well, I've got condensation in my house, but it's not mould.
No, that's because, well, condensation is caused by when people do their washing. You take your washing out, your washing machine, each washing load has 3.5 to 5 kilos
James,
of moisture.
This lad died of it. This boy, Awab Ishak, died from respiratory condition caused by prolonged exposure to mould, said the inquest.
But was that... No, and that's a terrible thing that's happened, but was that the building construction's fault, or was
that... Well, does it matter?
So we need to be taught about how to manage condensation. Condensation is caused by the moisture within the house. The house doesn't cause the moisture.
Have you, and there's no reason why you should, because I'm the journalist and you're the estate agent, have you seen the photographs of the conditions in which that little boy lived?
Yeah, I've had to go into places where they're out like that.
But you can't allow social landlords to behave in that fashion, James.
No, no, but...
There's no education in the world could stop that, surely.
No, you misunderstand.
I'm sorry.
The landlords, that homeowner has to have this place ventilated. Okay?
Right.
So, you need ventilation in the bathroom, the kitchen.
Okay, but that's what this will, I imagine, will bring about. Because if there are cases, and you'll want this as well, I'm sure, as a responsible
100%.
Estate agent, then 100%. This won't be allowed to happen again.
Yeah, but we've rented out places. We've put, there's a humidistat fan that comes on when the moisture is too high. The tenants turn them off or block them.
Well, the music means we have to move. That is ridiculous, James. Thank you. And I'm grateful for your call and your experience in the field. I think, well, we are definitely, well, we both want the same thing, which is no little boys or girls or anybody to die in the fashion that chap did. But I do think it's not really about education, it's about enforcement. But James, have yourself a good day. Coming up after the news, reasons to be cheerful, not many for this government, according to the Health Secretary. What does Housing Secretary Steve Reid say?
What we need to point to is the change we're making happen, because there is hope. People need to feel that there's hope. So Wes, speaking just there, is in charge of the National Health Service. We've got 5 million extra appointments now.
I think you can actually hear me groan at the start of that clip. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a cabinet minister says the justice system needs to be rebuilt from the bottom up following the release of Hadish Kabatu. The migrant, who was serving a 12-month jail sentence for sexual assault, was freed from HMP Chelmsford by mistake on Friday. The Ethiopian national is expected to be deported this week. The Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, told Nick it was a shocking failure.
Way that individual shouldn't have even been in the country, let alone carrying out the offence that he did, and he certainly should not have been released by accident. It's unbelievable how that could have happened. But I don't think it's a surprise to people that we have a broken criminal justice system. We know that at the time of the last general election, the prisons were full up. There were no spaces for criminals who were given a custodial sentence to be locked up.
A highly critical report says the Home Office has squandered billions of pounds of taxpayers' money on asylum hotels. The Home Affairs Committee says the system is failed, chaotic and expensive, with poor oversight of the private companies involved. Ministers say they're already exploring alternatives to hotels to save money.
New rules requiring social landlords in England to investigate and fix dangerous damp and mould have come into force. They will face court action if they fail to improve conditions quickly as part of AWAB's law. It's named after a two-year-old boy who died from mould exposure. Mark Slater from the Greater Manchester Tenants Union says enforcement will be key.
Because at the moment, if a tenant has an issue, the methods that are open to them are to use the Housing Association own internal process, go to the Ombudsman or take private legal action. And I think it's important that tenants are made aware of their rights and the structure of taking housing associations to task.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to travel to Turkey for talks on the deal to sell British-made Typhoon fighter jets. He will meet President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to discuss the multi-billion pound agreement announced in July. The King is to attend the dedication of a national memorial commemorating LGBT members of the armed forces. He'll lay flowers at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire later. Charles will also meet veterans who were affected by the military's pre-2000 ban on gay personnel. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 96.51. That is up 6. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through this morning, turning drier for most this afternoon. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
Well, you know what?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies in a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine on Monday, the 27th of October. Reasons to be cheerful, not many. And that's a senior member of the government. This is the turnout, who would be deputy leader of the party, is less than 17%. People would rather go to the dentist than vote for this. Why?
In other news, the Reform UK MP under fire for her comments about the representation of non-white people on TV advertisements. In the previous hour of the show, I spoke with multi-award winning copywriter Paul Burke. He said,
there was a time, without a doubt, when there weren't enough black or Asian people in ads, despite there being a growing number of black and Asian people in the UK. So they decided quite rightly to correct that, and they perhaps overcorrected it.
And as President Trump arrives in Japan as I speak, as part of his tour of Asia, back home in Washington, Bob the Builder's in. At the White House. Fortunately, the West Wing survives. The East Wing has been demolished to produce the biggest and best ballroom the world will ever see. But there's simmering local anger. You'll hear more in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A couple of things to bring before you as I ask the question. What level of despair do you have for the state of the country at the moment? Whether it is the fact that someone who shouldn't even be in this country and should be offered deported is allowed to walk out of a jail and given instructions how to get to the local railway station. On a similar theme, whether the risible one in, one out has actually meant one person effectively behaving like a P&O ferry across the channel as he simply came back. Whether it's the state of most of our hospitals. Whether it's the state of some against some, not all, of our schools. Whether it's the fact that until recently, when it came to our defence, we didn't have enough diesel to put in one of the battleships. It is enough at times to despair. I've not even talked to you yet about the economics of it and the supposed growth. So hardly surprising, then, that this does appear to be growing. But let's take you back to Saturday, when we learnt the result of the deputy leadership for the Labour Party, in which the turnout was 16.6%. So even Labour's own, whatever you want to call it, soul, even they're not motivated at the moment. So they had that disastrous result in Caerphilly. They've got an election where most people rather stay at home. And it's not like they only had one night to get out there. They had a period of time in which they could vote. And there was no interest. So here's Health Secretary Wes Streeting speaking on Sky News yesterday following that disastrous loss in Caerphilly.
All the time as Health and Social Care Secretary, I am battling cultural challenges in the NHS too, whether that's people abdicating responsibility, not listening to patients, covering things up when things go wrong. And all of those things undermine public trust and confidence, not just in the NHS, but in the ability of government, and I mean by which I mean any government, to be able to effect change. And there is a deep disillusionment in this country at the moment, and I would say a growing sense of despair about whether anyone is capable of turning this country round.
Well, that's the health. What of his colleague, the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid? I put that to him in the first hour of the show.
Well, people voted for this.
Do you agree with him?
I recognise what he's saying. I do recognise that. We saw it in the Caerphilly by-election, didn't we? But
well, we did. We saw it in the turnout for your deputy leadership. It was 16.6%. Even the party faithful have lost confidence in you now.
Well, I think that involves a lot of trade union members who don't always take part in internal elections. But what we need to point to is the change we're making happen, because there is hope. People need to feel that there's hope. So Wes, speaking just there, is in charge of the National Health Service. We've got 5 million extra appointments now, and we're starting to see those waiting lists
come down. Well, he talked about despair, of course, on Sky News.
Well, it doesn't make me despair when I see waiting lists come down, nor does it make me despair when I see that we've increased the national minimum wage so that some of our lowest paid people in the workforce are getting a page rise. And nor does it make me despair when I see that we've banned the unfair bonuses that the water bosses were awarding themselves, and we've brought in the funding to clean up sewage from our rivers. So I think there's reasons for hope as well, Nick.
And what are the Conservatives? Well, in the last 20 minutes or so, I spoke with Tory grandee Michael, now Lord Gove. He's held cabinet positions, education secretary, housing, I think levelling up as well. And I asked him about the level of despair over the current state of government.
It's deeply depressing. Again, I want to be fair. Now, I'm no longer a full-time politician. I think Wes Streeting, as health secretary, has actually made some progress in cutting waiting lists. And I think Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, is genuinely intent on doing the right thing with regard to criminals and illegal migrants. But the rest of them, honestly, and I think that Keir Starmer has proven a massive disappointment as Prime Minister over the course of the last 15 months. Almost everything he set his hand to has either mouldered or failed. And I think that the deputy leadership election was a vote of no confidence in him from his own activists, because they voted for the woman, Lucy Powell, whom he'd sacked.
Let's bring Scarlett Maguire into the conversation, political commentator, former communications advisor to the Labour Party. Let's finish with the thing that, with the matter that Michael Gove discussed last there. 16.6% turnout. Why so low, do you imagine, Scarlett? Good morning.
Good morning, but because there were two very, very good women who were standing for the deputy leadership. And I think for a lot of people, they thought, does it really matter which of them? It's not that one of them was saying something incredibly different. Both of them were saying, we want Labour to win. And we understand that things have gone wrong and we're going to try and put them right. I can understand. You know, it was not exactly an election that set the country on fire.
I think most people. It didn't set the faithful on fire either, Scarlett, did it?
It didn't what?
It didn't set the party faithful alight either, did it?
No, it didn't, because actually either of them were going to do a perfectly good job. That was the real problem. Was there wasn't some firebrand saying, I want to get rid of Keir, or somebody else saying everything that Keir does is wonderful. Both of them were saying we need to do some serious work, and both of them were very, very competent.
Do you share this sense of despair as spelled out by Wes Streeting yesterday, Scarlett?
I think the country is disappointed. I think that when they voted for Labour, that they thought that they might not get bells and whistles, but they thought that they would get serious competence. And what we have discovered is that actually it's very difficult to run a country. It's very, very easy to criticise from the side, as Labour discovered before the election, and much more difficult to put everything right. And I think that they've got to concentrate on getting it right. Now, I mean, one of the problems is that not all the cabinet ministers had a plan for when they got into government, and so things have slipped, and things slipped so that a year on they're trying to do it. But if you look at, I mean, Shabana Mahmood really, really tried to do a lot in justice. The prison system was in an appalling state and still is, and is going to still take a lot of time to do it. Ed Miliband knew what he wanted to do about energy, and Bridget Phillipson knew what she wanted to do about schools, about the under fives, about breakfast clubs, and she did it. But a lot of other things, they just didn't get done.
Lastly,
Wes Streeting, actually, to be fair on Wes.
Well, Michael Gove said
Wes
that, yeah.
Wes put a lot of work into the NHS, and I have benefited.
Oh, I trust your health is in a good place now. Lastly, Scarlett, how much of this has to be carried by the boss, by Sir Keir?
Well, obviously, ultimately, Keir has to carry it all, doesn't he? And he has to make sure that everything changes.
Be well. Scarlett Maguire, thank you. Former communications advisor for the Labour Party, political commentator. Listening, Luke Trill, who's executive director of the polling company More in Common UK. Tell us about the most recent polling that you and your colleagues have done then. Does it bear out this idea from Mr. Streeting of a sense of despair across much of the UK? Morning to you.
Good morning. I think Wes Streeting has captured the public mood probably better than any politician I've heard this Parliament. When we ask people to describe Britain in a word, the most common word that they use is broken. And when we go around talking to people around the country, it's hard to overstate the depth of misery and frustration with the status quo. And I think what was important about Wes's comments is he got to the heart of it. It's not just that things feel bad. It's that people no longer feel that politicians and politics can get us out of that mess. And that is what is driving what I call roll the dice sentiment. It is reform might be a risk. The Greens might be a risk, but they can't be any worse than what we've got now. They might actually be able to do stuff. So why don't we roll the dice on something new entirely?
Well, that's intriguing. So what do the two big established parties, Labour and Conservative, what do they do to combat the roll the dice theory, Luke?
Well, look, I mean, I think for the government, it is they've got to start making progress on people's priorities, which are the cost of living, public services and immigration. And I'm afraid, you know, if we just look at immigration, the events of the past couple of weeks are going to have reinforced that sense that government isn't in control. The fact that the one in, one out deal resulted in someone coming back to the UK, the sex offender who escaped, didn't escape, was released.
No, and pointed towards Chelmsford railway station.
Yeah, was released. You know, it's all going to reinforce that sense that government doesn't have control. And there is a reason that take back control was one of the most powerful electoral slogans of, you know, this century, because it spoke to that desire that people have. So I think government's got to show it's in control. I think for the Tories, the challenge remains, you know, getting into the conversation, like answering the question, what is the point of the Conservatives when you've got Reform UK? And to be fair, I think they started to answer that at their conference. They're clearly going to try and be the party of fiscal conservatism. Whether that's enough, though, you know, given their track record in government, given the fact that actually people want a bit of the good times at last, I don't know.
Luke Trill, thank you. Executive Director of the polling company More in Common UK. So, Mr. Trill and his colleagues, polling supports that. There is this sense of despair. That's exactly Wes Streeting's words. How is it to be beaten? Or, of course, can you point to things? Actually, you know, 15 months in, whatever it is, they're getting there. Apart from perhaps in the health service. We'll have a look at your responses after the 9:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A report by MPs says the government must get a grip on the UK's failed migrant accommodation system. The Justice Secretary is to set out details of an inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabatu and rules requiring housing associations in England to fix damp and mould issues more quickly have come into force. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers this morning, drier later, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 both ways to Junction 6 at Bricket Wood. It's because a car's overturned northbound and southbound is slow because of onlookers. On the M25, there are lengthy delays clockwise to Junction 27 at the M11. It's following an accident where only one lane is open. And also anti-clockwise, it's very busy at Junction 29 at the A127. This is a separate accident where two lanes are closed. On the A1, there are northbound delays up to Mill Hill Circus, and this is because of an accident. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Waterloo and City and District lines, and also London Tramlink services are disrupted at Wimbledon because of engineering works.
This is LBC.
Can you hear that? It's the sound of billions of live cultures in Activia Kefir, our most diverse mix made with 16 strains, including probiotics, plus calcium. Because when your gut feels good, you feel good. Activia Kefir from Danone. Calcium contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. Live cultures and yogurt improve lactose digestion of the product in individuals with difficulty digesting lactose. Enjoy as part of a balanced diet and lifestyle. Activia, your gut is where it all begins.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Protect your small business and understand cyber security.
A sense of despair. Ant in Worksop. What do you say, Ant? Good morning.
Panic, yes. I had several emails from the Labour Party to cast my vote, but I did. I just ignored them, really, because I'm just so disappointed.
Right, so you're some of the 84% or whatever it might be who decided not to get involved. Why so?
Well, obviously, Keir Starmer said he was going to change the political climate, and he hasn't. He's made it worse, which I didn't think could be possible. And obviously, unfortunately, I've been working 25 years and I've had to finish work due to side effects of the AstraZeneca vaccine. So I'm undergoing treatment at the moment, which has stopped me from working.
Oh, I'm sorry. What were you doing? What had you done for 25 years?
So I was in the horticultural industry, so I was landscaping and that, but right. Unfortunately I've got rheumatoid arthritis now, so it has literally rendered me unable to work. So,
what sort of age are you?
44.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. Boy. You'd have another 20 years with a bit of that.
Yeah, exactly, and I love my job.
I have to say, COVID wasn't the fault of the Labour government, of course, Anne.
No, I know. Oh, I know that. And obviously, I'm not anti-vax. It was just, I think, well, we were sold, like, you've got to get your vaccines or you can't be going on holiday and blah, blah, blah. But I think, obviously, I was just one of the unlucky ones.
So your belief is your rheumatoid arthritis was caused by the vaccine, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and my rheumatologist has told me that. So he must have other cases. But, see, the Welfare Act, you know, unfortunately I've had to go on benefits, which, you know, I really hate.
Right.
But I've just had to, and now what they were doing with the welfare. It's just...
Well, I want to bring you in. I just need to say, of course, please don't be offended, but there are many, many medical studies that would say that the vaccine was very effective, and please don't be offended, it did not lead to conditions like that. And I take on board what you say, but I just do have to get that out there. But coming back to that, again, awful as it is, why is this government not helping you? Why do you despair? Because everything you said so far has not actually been on Labour's watch, in fairness to them, Ant.
No, but I just think, I mean, 15 months into the new government, and I can't see the big change what's happened.
No, no. And so, how does that affect you? Is it, if you don't mind me asking, is it possibly that you might be losing some benefits as a concern for you as well?
Well, yes. I mean, at the moment, obviously I can't work because I'm under treatment, and some of the treatments are, it's not very pleasant side effects. So, yeah, it is a worrying time, to be fair, and I'm sure it's a worrying time for a lot of people as well. And obviously, kicking with pensions, pensioners last year, I mean, it just seems to be attacking the most, you know, vulnerable ones in society.
Be well, and I'm going to say I hope your condition improves. I understand that in main cases, I'm afraid it doesn't. It's a chronic condition, but I hope that you can get some kind of relief, and thanks for getting started. So that's it. The first call you have is from someone who had the opportunity to vote as a member of the Labour Party for the deputy leadership and had no interest. 16 points. Even Labour's not bothering to get involved now. We'll come back to that conversation in a moment. Now to other matters, and it was confirmed on Friday that the east wing of the White House has now been completely demolished days after construction started on the planned $300 million, which comes in at around £225 million ballroom. Donald Trump is adding to the historic building, saying it will be the biggest and best ballroom we've ever seen, and bizarrely will have room for 999 guests. Presumably someone can't bring their wife or husband or someone. I don't know how that'll work. Maybe one security guard has to stand outside. But there's one man who just cannot wait to bring on the ballroom.
This was something they've wanted for at least 150 years. In order to do it properly, we had to take down the existing structure. The way it was shown, it looked like we were touching the White House. We don't touch the White House. That's a bridge, a glass bridge, going from the White House to the ballroom. Then you get into the lobby of the ballroom, and then you go into the magnificent, the main room. And it's something that has gotten incredible reviews.
Dr. Donna Jackson is expert on US politics and history at the University of Chester. Doctor, can you break this down? So it does touch the White House, or it doesn't touch the White House, or are we dealing with semantics here? Good morning.
I think we're dealing a little bit with semantics. The East Wing is the White House, was the White House. When Trump is talking about the White House, he's talking about the original executive mansion. But the additions are still the White House. It's just changed in size. So he has destroyed part of the White House. The new building will touch the White House because it will be connected to the full building that's there. And it is now, of course, going to be one room, whereas the old East Wing was suites of offices, all sorts of things. Nobody's talking about where those much-needed spaces are going to be.
I understand much of it was the executive wing for the First Lady. Is that correct, Doctor?
Yeah. It's fine to call me Donna. Absolutely fine to call me Donna.
Oh, thanks, Donna. Right.
Absolutely. So the First Lady's offices were there. Other offices were there as well, but that was the main area. And, of course, certainly since Rosalind Carter, but even before then, the First Lady has been an incredibly important part of the administration. She's had her agenda, she's you know, done amazing things. And Trump is basically saying, which I think reflects some of his other feelings, that woman's role isn't important, and he'd rather have this ballroom that's going to be nearly the size of two football fields. You know,
One argument, Donna, you can put is that I read that the current ballroom can take only 200 people. Now, for a country the size and the heft of the United States of America, that is not particularly, what should we say, lavish, is it?
It's a beautiful room. I've done the White House tour more than once. It is a beautiful room, and the United States has managed with that size of ballroom very well for 100 years. It has entertained kings and queens. There's a beautiful picture of Princess Diana dancing in the original ballroom. That room is still there. Mm. When more space has been needed, the Raja events are held in marquees outside. That has worked really, really well with no complaints from anybody. You know, so... Yes, a large room is lovely for the very rare occasions when the president might need another 998 guests, but they're so rare, and surely, especially with everything going along, there is more important things for the administration to be concentrating on.
Well, that's what I want to come to lastly, Donna. I've read this weekend, the images of broken masonry, rubble and steel all jutting out from arguably America's most famous address. What are your friends and contacts in the States saying about it?
They are heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken. It is just a building, but it's the people that were there. The old cinema room, the cinema screening room, when there's great pictures of the first family using it and everything, that's all gone. Mm. I met Bill Clinton in the White House in the East Wing. That's gone. It's those connections. And this is not, let's not forget this, this is not Trump's home. This is a home he is a guest of the nation in, and he's gone in and destroyed a piece of property that does not belong to him. It belongs to the nation. Without asking, without going through the... It isn't a legal requirement, but it's a courtesy requirement.
Because apparently he was told, as the president... It is reported, he asked, what permissions do we have to get? And he was told, none, you're the president, you can do what you like.
He absolutely can, but every other president who has made modifications, not destroying anything, but repurposing rooms or basketball courts, a current famous example, have gone through the process and have asked for the permission and have done it out of respect for the country, for the nation, for the people. Trump does not have any of that respect. And he can. He can knock down the West Wing if he likes legally. And who's to say he won't?
Donna, enjoyed our conversation. Thank you. Dr. Donna Jackson, expert on US politics and history at the University of Chester. Right, let's take out of, what have I got? I've got a minute and a bit to do some of the many, many emails, texts that have come in regarding. Let's do the one we had talked about, this new reform as regards housing. A lot of you wanted to get involved in that. Amy says you cannot make landlords responsible for mould caused by the way the tenant lives. In fact, callers have said that. Most mould is caused by condensation, which is produced by behaviour. Yes, rising damp is a landlord's responsibility to fix very quickly. Stuart in Yorkshire, the death of the boy is tragic, but surely it's not the landlord's fault. What on earth are the parents or guardians doing? I wouldn't have let my children live in a place like that. They need to take responsibility and move their children out. Well, of course, Stuart, I'm sure no one is ruining the decision more than the little boy's parents, but that's assuming they had somewhere else to go, and from my memory of the case, they didn't. We've also talked, of course, about Hadush Kabatu. He's the Ethiopian asylum seeker and sex offender. Tiago in Bristol points out, I'm not defending him. He is a convicted sex offender and a danger to society. But the fact he kept going back to prison reception and was repeatedly turned away says everything about how broken Britain is. You can't really call that escaping. Well, hopefully, I've not for one moment tried to say that it's about escaping. And lastly, this comes down from Martin as regards taxes, because we talked in the first hour there could be a lot of taxes. He says they're coming down the tracks. Everyone who feels the spotlight is going to be on them. People need to wake up and smell the coffee. The countries are in the mire. It needs lots and lots of money. Nothing is off the table. Well, they already take quite a lot, don't they? But you're probably right, we're going to hear some more. Now, arguably the biggest row of the day, and certainly the one that's had you talking the most, are these comments from the Reform UK MP for Runcorn and Helsby, Sarah Poaching, on the TV on the weekend.
It drives me mad when I see adverts full of black people, full of Asian people. It doesn't reflect our society.
Well, the problem is it doesn't reflect our society because the research shows. But why would you be driven mad? Why would you be driven to that sort of emotion simply by watching someone trying to sell you, I don't know, a floor cleaner? We'll come to that. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Newstime, Thomas Watts.
A report by MPs says ministers need to get a grip on the billions of pounds being squandered on asylum hotels. The Home Affairs Committee says a promise to end hotel use by 2029 risks under-delivery and further undermining public trust. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, is expected to set out details of an inquiry into the release of Hadush Kabatu. The asylum seeker, who will now be deported, was freed from jail by mistake last Friday and arrested in North London yesterday morning. Social landlords in England are now required to fix damp and mould issues within strict timescales. The law is named after two-year-old Awab Ishak, who died as a result of mould exposure at his home in Rochdale. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning drier for most this afternoon, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
I always thought it should be me looking after Mum in her golden years. After all she's done for me, I wanted to be the one to support her. But I couldn't be with her all the time. So I contacted Home instead. After their first visit, Mum was over the moon, telling me all about the laughs they'd shared over a cup of tea. And that's when I realised it didn't need to be me looking after Mum. Just someone who cares for her, like I do. Find out more about award-winning, personalised home care at homeinstead.co.uk.
There she is, Aisha.
What's she wearing? A cashmere jumper?
With a designer bag and biker boots.
Oh, she's not on the school run. She's on the runway.
I spoke to Claire, who spoke to Soph, who spoke to Priya, and apparently it's all TK Maxx. So she didn't even spend a fortune. Oh, iconic.
Every day can be iconic with a TK Maxx deal. In-store, online and on the app.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money. So head to CELsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
Going to move on to those extraordinary comments from the Reform UK MP. And I've said once and I've said twice, in fact, I think it's true, deafening silence from Nigel Farage over the comments from one of his own. We'll look at that in a moment. But with Wes Streeting saying that there is a sense of despair, there is a sense that we can't fix the country in the light of that Caerphilly, that disastrous setback in Caerphilly in the Welsh Senate, I'm asking, do you share that level of despair? Ian in Surbiton, thanks for hanging on the line. Ian, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Their despair is going to get a bit worse because the recent deputy leader election, I'm actually one of those 16% that voted in it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much. And you voted for?
Lucy Powell.
And you voted for her because?
Because I'm not a member of the Labour Party. I'm a retired member of the GMB union who offered me a vote.
Of course. That's the union side. I'm so sorry.
Being a pensioner and the way they treated us over the winter fuel payment, I've been doing my own little campaign against any MP that pops up on X. And I thought, you don't want Lucy Powell as your deputy, do you, Keir? Guess what? Suffer. Because the first thing she does is criticise him in a speech. He's a goner.
Do you reckon?
He'll be gone. So, after May, she'll stick the boot in big time because he can't get rid of her.
So the England and the Welsh Senate and Scotland and London, by the way, he has a shocking time next year and then he's biffed. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, by I think April, I think there's possibly something else coming up in April in the courts, but I won't mention that.
Right.
He'll be gone.
And
he'll
who takes over?
That's a very good point, and I'm not Nostradamus.
You're obviously interested in politics, and you express your interest, and when you have an opportunity, you're going to vote. But can I just throw a couple of names at you? Would Wes Streeting fit the bill for you?
Tries too hard. He's that boy going, me. Miss.
Okay,
God,
I like that.
I can answer.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Angela Rayner?
Well, at least she's a genuine working class.
Okay, so she's gets a bit. Okay. Yvette Cooper?
No, please, no. I know where you're going with this. If he can't see a policeman, it's definitely not going to be David Lammy.
Right, OK. Do you mind my asking, you voted through your union, what did you do for a living, sir?
I'm a retired greenkeeper.
How interesting. And where did you do that, in London?
In Kingston, yes. And
how many years did you do that?
About 40 in total.
You kept parks and green spaces for 40 years?
Golf courses.
Okay. Wow. What changes did you see over your four decades, Ian?
That golfers still can't see where the little white ball's going. That's basically it. And still moan at things that go wrong that got nothing to do with greenkeepers.
I did enjoy our conversation. Do ring me again. Let's all put it in our diaries for next year and see if Ian is right. Have a relaxing day, Ian. Thank you for your conversation. Let's come to this political row that's brewing over reform, over the comments made from the Reform UK MP, Sarah Pochin. She was on Talk TV on Saturday taking calls.
Drives me mad when I see adverts full of black people, full of Asian people. And I feel that, you know, your average white person, average white family is not represented. It's something that's happened because, I believe, of the woke liberati that goes on inside, you know, this sort of like in the arty-farty world. You know, when it comes to, you know, northern towns like Runcorn that I represent, you know, I mean, it's just not representative of the rest of the country.
Well, I'll share with you some research that was done and published in the Times earlier this month on this. But let's tell you first, in the previous hour of the show, I spoke with multi-award-winning copywriter and Spectator columnist Paul Burke. I asked him whether he agreed with what Pochin was saying.
I think what happened was there was a time, without a doubt, when there weren't enough, when any black or Asian people in ads, despite there being a growing number of black and Asian people in the UK. So they decided quite rightly to correct that. The trouble is, I think they all decided it at exactly the same time. And they perhaps overcorrected it because the facts, you know, the figures speak for themselves. And it gives an unrealistic portrait of the UK population. And the danger is, I mean, I live in London. I was born and bred in Brent, the most multiracial borough in the country. But even I would think, God, if I didn't know, I'd think, blimey. So people that don't know are then given a false idea of how many black and Asian people there are in the country, and that can fuel the far right, and that's not a good thing.
Broadcaster Narinder Kaur said the comments were offensive.
The fact is, buyers support DEI, and buyers like to see multi-ethnicities, multi-racial adverts. It's really that simple. It's not a case of over-representation, because actually, South Asians are underrepresented, and Sarah didn't seem to be bothered about underrepresentation. The hard right are pushing the boundaries of abusing ethnic minorities every day, every week. We're hearing too many black and brown people in Handsworth, too many black and brown people in adverts. This isn't acceptable for Britain. Black and brown people matter. Adverts are just trying to sell stuff to everyone in that one-minute advert.
Now, here's the research that I cited in the previous hour. It's done by the agency Tapestry. This was published in the Times earlier this month. And Tapestry, for the sixth year running, audited the top 500 adverts across all broadcasters over two separate four-week periods. And they found that the percentage of black people is now at 51%. Black people make around 5% of the population. And for South Asians, they featured around 17% of advertisements. The population actually is around 8% of the country. So while what that MP is saying is right, why does it, quotes, make her mad or drive her mad? Well, you gave me your views in the last hour of the show, starting with Peter in Stirling.
I think the defence that it's poor phrasing is a bit pathetic, don't you think? I mean, this is a woman who's been in politics 10 years. She went to university. She's 56. She's a woman of the world, and she's intelligent. She knows exactly what she said. I don't think these comments were intelligent at all. It's, but I think that this is her pandering once again. I think she's decided that that's the crowd she wants to be in with. It's the people muttering angrily in the corner about, oh, there's too many blacks and there's too many Asians, and I don't like seeing all these people. Does anyone actually care what goes on in advertising?
NK is in Redbridge.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. I mean, talking about over-representation in ads, is she also going to the police and talking about under-representation of ethnic minorities? The whole thing about are you counting how many ethnic minority people are being given work in advertising? It's nothing to do with her. If adverts want to portray a certain society and say that, listen, we live in, you know, multiracial times, I don't understand why it's her business.
Kells in Harrow.
Nick, there's a saying that if one person says it, 10 people are thinking it. This lady is representing some, if not a lot of the part of this country.
Well, let's see what you're saying now. Hiya is in Nottingham. You're on the radio, Hiya. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know what the argument's about. I'm black, born in this country over 60 years ago. And you know what? We as kids had to sit and watch them take the Mickey with black and white minstrel show, the Robinson's Gollywog.
Apologies for anyone who's offended by that. I appreciate that you're robust enough to say that, but be aware that that is a very offensive term for some people, Hires. So I really want to have our conversation, but just be aware perhaps of others. Thank you so much. On you go.
Okay. A black person, that's words what we're
using. I'm honestly, please don't think I'm challenging your right to say the word. I'm honestly not. But I have to be aware that I don't want to cause unnecessary offence when I can control it. So, hi, I'm not in any way challenging. I'm just saying if you can just be aware of some people who find it a really difficult word. Please continue. Thank you.
Okay. So, that's how we found the word.
So, you're talking about black and white minstrels. There was a show called, Your Neighbour, Love Thy Neighbour.
Yeah. You know, we had to sit and watch them. Mind Your Language was another one. Watch things like that.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, we're in the 21st century right now.
Yes.
Yeah. We've been in this country long enough. We've helped to fight the world wars. You know, and again, how many people, English people, can say they've not gone on a Caribbean cruise, they've not gone to the Caribbean, they don't want a suntan, you know.
Let me ask you this. When you see someone selling soap powder or washing up liquid, do you notice, or a packet of biscuits, do you notice the skin colour?
No, I just look at the products.
Look at the products and I think, actually, that was quite good, or, oh, I'd forgotten about that, or, oh, I need someone to, I know, I want a packet of biscuits, so I'll buy X. That's probably how it works for me.
Yes, it's about the producer, it's about what is produced at the end. You know, the NHS, you know, it's about the service that's given.
Yeah, the MP... It's okay to cite the numbers because research backs it up, but it's her interpretation that's upset you, Hiya.
It's the way they're saying it, and the thing is, we've put up with it long enough, you know, and at the end of the day, I'm 60 plus, and there's older people than me, black, that were born here.
Yes.
And so what I'm saying is, grow up.
Grow up, says Hiya. Thank you again for all your input. Have a safe day. I should tell you that just over an hour ago, I monitored the 8, just coming up to, it's 9.43, I don't want to confuse you, but the 8.28 bullet is 9.43, and advertising on Sky News. And I was able to do that because I was walking out of one eye. And I can tell you that this groundbreaking research, the breakdown was 12 white people, 3 non-white Asian black people, 1 cat and 1 dog. And the advertisements were for pet food plan, a funeral cover and a charity. I can't remember what the other is. There were about 5-6 adverts that I saw. And so, 12 plays 3, 1 cat, 1 dog. I suppose you could argue, where's the rabbit? But I don't know. Mike's in Perth. You're on the radio, Mike. Good morning.
Nick, I think there's a brilliant coincidence because just myself and my wife, to let you know, are both about 80. And we were sitting watching the telly a couple of nights ago.
Right.
And my wife just turned to me and she says, isn't there a lot of...
Non-white people on the radio, on the television.
Yeah. Well,
why do you think she'd noticed that, Mike?
People on these adverts.
Yes, and she'd noticed that, Mike?
Yeah, she noticed it. It was just an observation.
Yeah, but why why was it... can I ask why it was relevant for her?
It wasn't... there was no relevance. It was it was an observation.
Okay.
She just said, because, I'll tell you what, as I say, we're both 80. Let's put it this way, we're both 80. We've watched telly for years and years and years and years. Right. And we notice it was just the adverts are, if you like, different now.
Okay. Why does it matter?
It doesn't matter at all. But it was an observation. And she's bright, so she noticed. You know, we've watched adverts, as I say, for
Years and years you've been watching TV. No, I think I'm onto that. I think I've got my head around that. And your wife made that observation because you've been watching TV for years and years. Mike, thank you for that. Let's give you a couple of... I'll tell you, Mike, to this point, Lynn in Devon. Modern adverts are dreadful, humourless, dull. I record every programme I can. I fast forward to avoid or I press the mute button. I suppose... Oh, what is it? It's a product of our age. There used to be more... What's the last advert that made you laugh? What actually made you laugh or really, really got home? Like the great adverts, what was it, the bloke in the black suit always delivering chocolates. Those were great advertisements, weren't they? The woman who used to sell cigars. I know you're not even allowed to... Well, you're not allowed to have a cigar. You're not allowed to have a woman in a bikini either. So that's the... Was it Mannequin? No, what the hell was that? Matador? I don't know, something like that. Some of those beer adverts were funny. Do you remember the bear? That was funny. Where's an advert last make you laugh? That's the reality. Never mind whether they're white, black, Asian. Just make me laugh. Then I'll buy your product. 9:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A cross-party report says ministers need to get a grip on the billions of pounds being spent on migrant accommodation. The Justice Secretary is to set out details of an inquiry into the release in error of Harish Kabatu. And social landlords in England are now required to fix damp and mould issues within strict timescales. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for most, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M1 northbound to Junction 6 at Brickett Wood. It's because a car's overturned and two lanes are closed. And southbound is also very busy because of onlookers. On the M25, there are clockwise queues to Junction 27 at the M11. It's following an accident. And anti-clockwise on the M25, it's slow at Junction 28 at the A12 after an accident, but all the lanes are back open. Very busy on the A1 northbound to Mill Hill Circus. That's because of an accident as well. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Central, District and Waterloo and City lines, and no Mard May line running today between Wilson Junction and Clapham Junction.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
When someone expresses horror at non-white faces, whether in Handsworth, adverts or the England football team, you do not have a debate.
James O'Brien on LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink, auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com, that's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new £1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Well done, Chris Shields. You've remembered a funny ad. Peter Kay's ads. They were very... John Smith's beer, was it? They were very good. Russell, I don't agree. The R White's... God, that is going back in time. Isn't it terrible? You can't think of any advert that's made us laugh. Oh, Daniel, the Hamlet advert, Rab C. Nesbitt in the photo booth. That was funny. Yeah, that was funny, but they're not particularly funny. We talk about these because of the views as put forward by that Reform UK MP who's highlighted what she sees, something that drives her mad about adverts. May's in Edmonton. May, what would you say to her? Good
morning. Hi. I think it just shows her level of ignorance and her level of racism, because there are people who are white but are not from Britain. They're from Russia, they're from Turkey, they're from all over the place. Mm. But she hasn't made that comment about them.
Well, how
they're
often
not
do you see
from,
them?
They weren't born in this country.
Hold on. How often do you see them on advertisements on the television, yes. May?
Sorry?
Right. How often do you see these people from Turkey on adverts on the television?
But how do you know Turkish people...
Would you answer my question?
Sorry?
Right.
I'm not sure why you're getting upset. Yeah.
I'm not getting upset, but you're saying that you see other we have white people in this country who are from Turkey and other countries, but how often are they on advertisements? That's what this MP is talking about.
How do you know they're not on advertisements?
Well... When was
how do we know? Because somebody looks white,
When was the last
white,
Turkish
Nick?
Person on an advert? Remind
yeah,
me.
Yeah, how do you know they're not Turkish?
I don't see what this is relevant to what she's saying about...
It is relevant, Nick. But what I'm trying to say is this. Because your face could be brown or black, it means that somehow there's a different level to who you are. Somebody who could be white, like yourself,
what do you
your
mean
family
a different level?
Is from it's Italian, yeah?
Or Switzerland.
But the fact is that but she wouldn't see that as unacceptable.
Swiss. But
she wouldn't. That wouldn't be unacceptable to her. Your family's from Italian, from Italy, that's fine. Right. But if somebody whose face is brown or black...
Right.
That's an issue with it.
Okay.
Why would that be?
I don't know. I've just lost it. What would you say to her, lastly, May?
I would say to her that she's a very ignorant woman because there's people from all backgrounds. There's white people from the Caribbean, from Africa. Yeah.
Yes.
And because they look like you've got people who are white from South Africa. So because she saw them on the TV, that would be acceptable. But if somebody also from South Africa who was black, somehow that's not acceptable?
You'd have to ask her. May, thank you for your input. I'm half Swiss, by the way. Paul's in Watford. You're on the radio. Good morning. Good morning.
Paul, hello, Nick.
Hello, sir. You're on the radio. Nick. What's the point you're going to make?
Yes, the greatest advert.
Here we go.
The Carlsberg greatest pub football team, when they had the Charltons.
I'd forgotten that.
Jack and Bobby. Peter Shilton in goal.
They
Peter Beardsley.
Funny. Why don't we have any humour anymore? God almighty, it's all so
They just tapped into what it's like playing for a pub side. You wake up on a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning, you might have had a little bit too much the night before. You're going through your laundry bag, trying to find a clean pair of socks and shorts. Where's my boots? And then the van turns up, everyone in the back of the van.
Yeah.
And you're picking up the bacon rolls and then ending up in the pub afterwards. And also the game itself was brilliant, you know. there were some tasty tackles going in there from Jack Charlton.
I'd forgotten that. Let's talk about this MP a little bit. Does it matter? Do you notice someone's skin colour if they're selling you washing up liquid?
The answer is no. I mean, look, advertising or selling, you have to tap into a certain market if you're selling a certain product.
Mm.
So, you know, be intelligent. If you're selling a product that you believe a certain nation would be more susceptible to or will buy that product, you would advertise to that group.
But we'd all go to wash our dishes, aren't we, irrespective of our skin colour.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, no, does it? No. No, is the bottom line. Yeah?
It does not reference or very relevant to you in any way. Paul, thank you. Olu's in Croydon. Hello, Olu. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Good
Hello, good morning.
Hello,
good
sir.
Morning. Yeah, what the lady said wasn't a bad thing.
Wasn't
Everyone
a
has
bad
got,
thing, did you say?
Yeah, it wasn't a bad thing. What she said wasn't bad.
Hmm.
Because everyone has got right to say what they feel like saying. If it were to be an Asian man or a black man that said that, there wouldn't be a problem.
Anytime
a white man or a white woman says something, there is always a problem.
Okay, can I just say, it's not a problem to point out that there is a statistical difference, but to say that it drives you mad, that's where I part company, because how on earth can it drive you mad?
Yeah, that might be a problem.
How could you be that bothered by it?
But to express our feelings or to express our observation, that shouldn't be a problem. If it were to be an Asian or a black man that said that, yeah, no, there won't be a problem. There won't be anything about it. But so far as it's a white man or a white woman, everybody will start talking, jumping on the wagon and start saying things. It's not right. I'll give you some example. Back in Nigeria, we've got different types of tribes. They don't like each other. They fight all the time. They kill themselves. But whenever they're in UK, they want the right thing. Any little thing, they'll say, oh, it's racist. This person said something bad to me. But right. Back home, they don't even like themselves. They don't even like themselves.
Right. Okay.
So, that's it.
I mean, okay. All right. Grateful for your input, Olu. That's it. Thank you. Kay's in Edgware. Kay, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello.
See, I just wanted to say, most of these campaigns, people actually understand as well, they could be... geared towards the global market. And if we actually want to look at statistics in terms of the minority across the world, it's actually Anglo-Saxon. So that could be an argument to it. I know they have tailored specific advertising campaigns for specific regions.
Right.
But that's one of the things that contribute to it. And as far as her being upset or it makes her sick, then that's just something that's wrong with her.
Makes her mad, not sick, mad is the expression she uses. It drives her mad, which I just find strange, weird, really.
Well, yeah, that's because of our own disease corrupt mind, to be fair, so take from that what you will.
Lastly, do you, same questions I put to other people, do you notice someone's skin colour when they're trying to sell you, I don't know, a car or type of battery or whatever it might be, breakfast cereal?
No, I look at the APR, I look at stuff like that, I look at how it's going to impact my pocket. I don't care who's trying to sell me something, I'm just worried about how much it's going to cost me at the end of the day, to be fair. Or I might look at the ingredients if it's some... I don't care about any of that stuff, to be fair.
It doesn't bother you. All right, okay, thank you. I'm going to take the last minute just because I've not done enough of your texts and emails that have been coming in. So let's just try and get one in on a couple of subjects that we've been discussing. On the subject of this, Sue in Watford says, you're definitely right, there will be more taxes to come. The key will be how to balance it, but I don't have any confidence in the Chancellor. In a related conversation, John says, you've been talking about despair in the previous hour. I have to say that I do despair of this government, but you have to be aware of the enormous legacy that they had to deal with. On the subject of mould, you remember there is this new legislation that's coming in, and we spoke with the Housing Secretary. Paul said, I did housing association work for 10 years. One of the major problems is tenants not airing their property. Certain people in particular never have the windows open. Washing is hung indoors. Oh, my God. Hung indoors. And many times we had extractor fans broken or disconnected because they ran too long. Tenants need to know they must ventilate their property. We also talked about the fact that asylum seeker and sexual criminal was allowed out of, well, not allowed out of prison, he was allowed out of prison and directed straight to the railway station. This comes in from Jessica on that. This shows the level to which this government has sunk. What on earth is the idea of the Justice Secretary, bringing in more red tape when this has been absolutely a failure of the existing situation? That needs to be reflected and reformed to make it work. All right, thanks for that. That does have a number of conversations as a full stop to that. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's waiting, the other side of the news on LBC. I am back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and if I have never mentioned this before, I apologise, but this is a very odd job. When stories break, whether it is some pervert being let out of prison early or a member of Nigel Farage's latest political bandwagon being explicitly and disgustingly racist in public, do this job for a living, and the temptation is to think, what's the question? What's the debate? Of course, what you have to recognise when things are really going south is that some things are not debatable. Expressing horror at the sight of black or brown faces, whether they're in television advertisements on the streets of Handsworth or behind the tills at Tesco, is not something you debate. So how do you talk about it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a report has blamed Home Office mismanagement for a chaotic and expensive asylum accommodation system. It says the government must set out a clear strategy to avoid squandering billions of pounds more of taxpayers' money. Ministers have promised to end the use of hotels to house asylum seekers by 2029. Dame Karen Bradley is chair of the Home Affairs Committee.
The sheer numbers are much higher than anyone thought, but there is undoubtedly been a lack of control from officials at the Home Office on these contracts. Contract management has been totally failed.
Ministers are expected to set out details of an independent inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabasu, the asylum seeker, who will now be deported, was freed from jail by mistake last Friday and arrested in North London yesterday morning. Social landlords in England are now required to fix damp and mould issues within strict timescales. They could face court action and compensation orders under Awab's law, named after a two-year-old boy who died. Awab Ishaq had a respiratory condition as a result of mould exposure at his home in Rochdale. The Conservative peer Lord Gove was housing secretary when the plans were drawn up.
You had the tragic case of a child who was in circumstances that shame the country. There's a big problem with a small proportion of our housing where people are just living in conditions that are completely inappropriate, unsafe, and in this case, lethal.
President Trump has arrived in Japan on the next stop of his tour of Asia. He is due to meet Emperor Naruhito ahead of talks with the new Prime Minister, Sane Takaichi, tomorrow. The oil and energy firm Petrofac is set to go into administration, putting 2,000 jobs in Scotland at risk. The group says it will continue to trade and is looking at a restructuring or sale options. It follows the termination of a major offshore wind energy contract by the Dutch grid operator. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 6 points at 96.51. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather. Sunny spells and scattered showers for most places, turning drier this afternoon. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good grief. Lord Gove. If you were listening to the same news bulletin as me, but if you could sum up the state of the nation in two words, would any words do the job better than Lord Gove? I heard Luke Trill from the polling company on with Nick earlier talking about how the word most used now by Britons to describe Britain is, wait for it, broken. Hands up if you wrote a best-selling book called How They Broke Britain. Michael Gove is the one person I didn't give a chapter to that I should have done. You think about what his fingerprints are on when it comes to the consequences of 14 years of Tory rule. Brexit, of course, behind which he put the full force of his considerable rhetorical ability. You look at the VIP lanes, the cronyism in the state of our schools. Few people carry more cans than Lord Gove. What does it say about a country that gives a peerage to somebody who is a byword for cronyism and I don't know what else, other bad things. We may get onto that a little later in the programme. Wes Streeting has spoken of the despair that sweeps the nation. It's funny how many of the conversations we have come back to the legacy, but you cannot use the legacy, the inheritance, to excuse everything that has been presided over by the heirs. So it'll be an interesting tightrope to walk. You probably don't. Back in 2017, I wonder how many listeners did we have in 2017? Does anyone know? I mean, it's easy to track, but it was about half of what we've got now, do you think? I don't know. But anyway, it was the beginning of an extraordinary journey that this radio program and, to an extent, this radio station have been on. So the way that we came to the attention of many, possibly including you, was because, for reasons I still don't fully understand, nobody, or hardly anybody, in the UK media was telling the truth about Brexit. The BBC announced that they would observe a sort of moratorium on it, a sort of internal announcement that we don't talk about it anymore, it's over, it's done, it's dusted, and you're sort of thinking, that's very, very odd. I can't remember any other events in the news that the state broadcaster would decide they were no longer going to discuss. Of course, the quicker the madness and the idiocy of that decision became evident, the quicker The people that had championed it and cheerled for it, step forward Lord Gove, Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson, Jacob Rees-Mogg, Nadine Dorries, various members of this profession, too many to mention, in fact, to insist that we shouldn't be talking about it anymore. But we did. And the evidence, the proof that there was an appetite for it is best evinced by the fact that all of our clips used to go viral and, well, I don't know quite what word to use to describe what it turned me into, but rather more people became aware of the time that we spend together every morning than had been previously. But some calls really stick out. I don't really listen back to them. Even my own algorithm doesn't often throw up clips of me, but it does occasionally. I don't think I've listened to this one, unless I've played it to you for reasons. I don't think I've listened to this one since December of 2017, when it actually occurred. And I want you to reflect upon, well, two things, really. In December of 2017, this was shocking. Even on a radio phone-in show, I saw one of the posh racists that essentially populate Nigel Farage's universe trying to claim that that racism is confined to local radio shows or local radio phone-ins or something. Well, that's obviously not true. It's just that perhaps less educated people sometimes are less effective at cloaking their racism in canards and camouflage. But this one, even by the standards of the calls we were taking at the time, this one stopped me in my tracks. And remember, just 3 years previously to this, another appearance on this programme by the aforementioned Nigel Farage had ended with the Sun newspaper calling him racist. Something has happened to our country in the ensuing near decade that is hideous and ugly. And part of the problem is that we keep having debates about it. Oh, is it racist to say that there are too many black people in Handsworth? Is it racist to say that there's too many black people on television? Is it racist? Yes. Yes, it is. And it is disgusting. And the massive majority, if not all of the people that you're referring to, have as much right to be here as the people making the racist comments. But you can't help yourself. Got to have a phone in. Got to have a debate. Got to do it. Got to do it. Do you want to hear Stephen Harrow, December 2017? Okay, and take my word for it that this was responded to at the time with a mixture of derision and horror.
I'll give you an absolute point here. If you went down to my local supermarket, I won't name which one it is, okay?
Yeah.
And one of my sons tried to get a job down, or two of my sons tried to get a job down there in a few years when they were in between university and going into going from college to university. At one point, James, there was 23 tills open, and 22 of them, okay,
yes, mate,
had Indians or Pakistani people.
But we're talking now, about the European Union, Steve.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say, James, is this is where it's all coming from. And when I mentioned this to the manager, okay, the manager said to me, we have to reflect the local community. And the point I'm trying to make, James, and you're trying to, to a degree, defend me, but to attack me, is that right, James?
Mate,
is why people have voted out of Europe.
Because we've got, right, too many brown people on the tills in Harrow.
It's not about having too many, but when I was...
Well, what is it then, Steve? Just can't, mate, slow down a little bit. Because if you're not complaining about there being too many brown people, why do you keep talking about the number of brown people in the hospital and the number of brown people in the supermarket?
The reason I'm saying that is, James, is because that is why people voted to leave Europe, because of Great Britain.
I don't disagree with you. No, it's not because of Great Britain losing its identity. It's because people are frightened about...